You're on a need-to-know basis. So we're going to get started here this morning. So it's Thursday, October 5th, 2017. It is 9 a.m. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners convening for a county administrative workshop. We've got a pretty packed agenda here today. First on the agenda is item number one, legal counsel, assistant county counsel one and two job descriptions. Item number two is draft resolution number 2017-047 in the matter expressing no confidence in the U.S. Forest Service management. Item number C is real property specialist job description. So let's go with A and probably have JJ come up and maybe even Arthur if he has anything to contribute of substance to this conversation. Otherwise,
it's still working. You're not interrupting us.
Mr. Counsel.
Good morning. I had an opportunity after Tuesday to communicate through email with Commissioner Morgan, and she expressed her support for this proposal.
Great.
And so I think that was basically where we left off at the end of that meeting, public meeting.
How's she going to pay for it? I'm just kidding. But how are we proposing? I mean, we've got ISF. There's some funds there. It's part of my solution to funding this was has to do with another agenda item later on, but I think we can start it now. My thought for the addressing the RR challenges, the rural residential ones, for me, enforcement of the current regulations or the ones that we just put into place is really, really important, and we don't have the staff to do it right now. We didn't have the staff before Measure 91 to address the inherent challenges with land use, and we certainly don't have it now. The Measure 91 has put a bunch of people on the map doing some things that are conflicting with their neighbors. And so my thought was is to use majority of, the revenues from the distribution formula from OLCC, 3% collection. I think we're looking to get $60,000 of the 3% for this year. And Arthur's best guest estimate is between $250,000 and $300,000 for the state's distribution of OLCC funds. And my thought was is that with those, you could probably, maybe not using all of it, but there's three things that are necessary for code enforcement to be effective. You need somebody in Wally's office to be able to be dedicated to that kind of a thing. And I think that would be accomplished with the job descriptions that we have in front of us. There'd be a capacity for a person to do that. And so there'd be a revenue stream to pay for that, both maybe as a cost share with planning to do land use issues through that office and the OLCC distribution resources. And then you need a code enforcement officer, and that, and then you need probably an officer, a deputy, to kind of shepherd the whole thing, be dedicated to it. So those are the three positions that I saw necessary for proper code enforcement to address the issues. And that would probably dovetail really well with whatever we chose to kind of come out with, reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on the RR. I think those need to go hand in hand. So it works. I think that there's a funding stream to pay for this, and so that was my biggest hurdle, is how do you pay for it? And I think dedicating some OLCC funds, planning dollars, makes a really good sense.
That would almost seem like that would be the intention of what you'd use it for, especially in Josephine County, where it's bigger than anywhere else in the state.
Yeah.
You know, that's a bigger issue than it is anywhere else, so I'm in favor of that. I think that's
if that sounds well, good, I think we can, I can work with Arthur and we can put the numbers down specifically in JJ and Mr. Hicks. And
check with Sheriff on that to make sure that he's involved with that.
Yeah.
Check with the sheriff to make sure, because you said you're going to dedicate a deputy to
it. We're going to pay for it, so he doesn't get the deputy. If he doesn't sign up with that as being a priority of that position or one position, and it doesn't go that way. So
I'm sure he will. But
I'm sure he will, too, but he needs, you're absolutely right. He needs, this is just my first blush glance in public expression of a thought that I had earlier in the week that I thought, wait a second, that's how this is all going to work. People's concerns about passing the best RR, you know, hybrid between the bookend of an all-out prohibition to doing what we do right now, and somewhere in the middle is the sweet spot. But all of that requires good code enforcement officers and a dedicated team to make sure that they can carry out what what I think the board's intent is. And without that, it just looks good. You know, it's on a shelf.
The frustration of the conversations I've had, and I've had many on the phone with the public that says, you know, come out here and do something about this. We don't have the resources to do that, period. No matter what we pass, we don't have the ability to back it up.
We need to answer that.
We need that.
Okay.
I get a lot of them.
Well, that's a little different than what maybe you had portrayed to Commissioner Morgan. I think we've got work to do on it before we say yes, this is where we're going, but I would plan on moving this forward, and I don't hear a lot of concerns or objections. So we'll put something together formally on paper of how this all works together, and then present that and move forward.
We would have the ability to put all this into motion by the first of the year.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's very important that
with
the state coming down with their change of regulations and our code or whatever we come up with, that it all be ready to pull the trigger on at the first of the year.
I think they'd all double
that. Everybody know going into 18, this is what the law of the land on.
Yeah. Does that sound good?
Sounds good. Should we bring it back next week at some point? Is that appropriate timing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so our current status with the law clerk position is that we did put out the announcement and got a number of qualified applicants, none of whom I think have been responded to yet because we're sort of waiting on board. Is that what we should continue doing at the moment until if we get finality on this?
I think is that position description closer to one of these that would work, or do you have to start over?
It's close to one of these that would work.
Okay.
But where we're at is a lot of the folks who applied were licensed by the bar, and so they might be interested in the...
So there could be some that go for one and some that go for the other.
Yes.
But the challenge is where was the salary advertised for the range? Because one of these dropped, but one of these is a new kind of deal. So
yeah, the law clerk position is significantly lower than, you know, a full attorney position, because it doesn't require to be a full attorney.
Right. So you need to advertise for the full attorney position.
Yeah. I would expect to have a bigger applicant pool of specific people that are, you know, I've passed bar, I'm an attorney, I'd like to work for the counties as such.
Yeah. Well,
it could be that some of these folks would also be interested in that.
Yeah.
I think the board can endorse the idea of moving forward with advertising for the full attorney position today. What we're talking about putting a fine point on is how is the cost allocation being divided up.
Yes.
And that's our job. That's an administrative function as opposed to get the job description solidified and advertised for.
Okay.
So there is a capacity to pay for it. How we're divvying up the specifics of it, I don't think really matters. I don't want to hold up advertising, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. A lot of sense.
Okay.
Okay, that's our plan.
We can move forward.
So what I'll do is I'll have my office finalize the preliminary job description, advertise for it, and then the finalized job description can be approved next week.
Okay.
And ultimately, if the board elects to change their mind, we can always pull it. It's not a big deal.
Great.
Sounds good. And so I can take on coordinating with the Schmelzer and the sheriff to try and get everybody in the room for the budget discussion.
Great.
On that. And
that
Arthur.
Sounds
okay.
Good. Yeah.
I will do that. I think we can. Okay. So we got one of them.
Yeah,
aware.
Everybody's here minus the sheriff.
Okay.
And stuff. And I'm not expecting this to impact his budget. It needs to be, you know, we're doing it for other kind of intent. Because I think as long as he's using his budget for it, he gets to do what he wants to do with that position. And it's kind of like a contract deputy. That's the way I see it, as they can do other
specialized
things,
deputy.
But their primary function, that's like the Marine deputy, they can do anything, but their primary function is river safety.
Right.
So, okay.
It's like a beat cop. Like, when they know the people, and they can get their sources,
right,
and they can get, it's
you have
an effective
have a consistent
law enforcement
person. That's what I was thinking, because it was like the guy that we had in Cave Junction years ago, George Gasperson. He knew everybody, and the level of enforcement wasn't really as necessary because he just got everybody to kind of be on the same page, and it worked really, really well. So I think that's the missing link
they
of all of our...
thumb on the pulse of what they're...
Totally. So, okay, great.
Good idea.
Sounds really good.
There's a plan.
Okay. Well, that's a step in the right direction. Draft Resolution 2017-047 in the matter of expressing no confidence in the U.S. Forest Service for management. I have put together some things, some resources that I haven't had a chance to pull out specific nuances. You were going to check on the statistical.
Indeed, and I asked Dave Streeter, our forestry manager, to take a look at the resolution, and everything looked fine to him. He made a few changes that I thought looked good, and so I believe Wendy has provided both the copy that you saw on Tuesday and also the Dave Streeter kind of revisions, but nevertheless, between Herman, Senator Bershiger's office, myself, and Dave Streeter, these are as verified as we can ever get these numbers to be.
Great. So. I think this is a great start. What I would recommend is next week, I'm in Salem for the Association of Oregon Counties meeting, and I'm chairing the Public Lands Committee. I'd like us to kind of talk about, like to have the opportunity for that committee to kind of weigh in on some of the things that they saw that might be helpful to add into this. And then on Friday, I'm at the ONC Association's board meeting, and they also might have input. So it feels as though we kind of need to wait a week, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like his changes in here on the wildfire initial attack practices.
Yes.
Yeah, that's good, because that's really that's part of what's at issue here.
Yes.
Okay, so you're going to take this with you next week.
Yes.
And you're going to have the other two AOC and ONC weigh in on this.
Yeah, if they can.
And see if you can get some signers on this, just other counties and whatnot to do.
Yeah, it would be great if we could have
that. It would be very, very important if we had a solidarity on that.
I know that there's probably a lot of interest.
Oh, yeah.
So.
I think so.
Real property specialist job description.
And sorry, one more admin.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, we plan then to bring it back to the Tuesday afternoon, October 17 meeting. Would that be the best time? Okay.
That'd be great.
Okay.
Afternoon on October 17th?
Yes.
Because I'm out in the morning on the 17th.
It's our standard legal meeting. Are you going to be?
Yeah.
Can I move it?
I should be here in the afternoon, but I won't be in the morning on the 17th.
Okay. Yeah.
That'll work.
That'd be great.
Sounds good.
We'll have a draft ready for review. Item number 1C, real property specialist job description.
Yes, and so I wasn't here last time the board discussed this, but my understanding was that it was kind of tabled, and so an inquiry had caused me to go ahead and just add it, since we're talking about job descriptions, and find out if the board had any desire to continue discussing essentially the revisions. There's a few revisions that would be made to the position description that would indicate that it would be more of an NU14 level of compensation than the current NU11.
I don't remember being part of that conversation. If I was. Was I here, JJ? I was here, wasn't I?
Yeah.
I just don't remember it.
Your primary concern, you wanted to look at the long-term strategic plan associated with that position. So it wasn't that you had
sure sounds like me.
But it wanted to, you wanted to make sure it fit into our long-term plan.
I'm having to come up with
here's
thoughts on it.
I don't put you on the spot at all, but
no, it's okay. Did you have any thoughts?
No. I'm hoping it came from your end of the table.
It certainly feels like it.
That's kind of the report that came in from the meeting, that it was, yeah.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to be able to just pitch on this one right now.
Okay.
We need clarification.
Sure.
Wendy, can we put this on my list of things to review? I might have a conclusion by the end of the meeting, but at this point I really don't.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
No.
Just a reminder, kind of my thoughts on the position. Wally and I looked at, you know, what was the kind of genesis of the position when we first created it, and then what has it kind of developed into over the last few years. And then I did a reevaluation of our comparable counties, you know, that have similar positions. And there's not a whole lot that have this position. It's one of these often hodgepodge kind of positions where they have property management as part of
somebody
something
else's.
Else. Yeah. You know, and two or three people kind of do it, where we have one person who does it.
We tried that for a long time.
Yeah,
it didn't work.
It wasn't effective.
No.
And I think a lot of counties find that when they hodgepodge it, you get what you get.
Yes.
That choice.
I've been here through the probably the gamut, not as much as Ms. Pat Ellison, but I've been here a little while knowing that we had a 0.6 Chet Boland who did a very good job, but really didn't have the capacity within the job description or his time frame to do everything that Mike is doing. I did it for a couple of years really poorly, just cursorily covering things. Frankly, legal's office did everything. They did the lease renewals and all of that, but that's all that was accomplished. It wasn't broader than that, and frankly, they're still doing a majority of it. So I really want to see, probably have a conversation with Mr. Hicks here about what he sees, how it fits in his office before we move forward. That's a conversation that needs to happen, Wendy.
Okay.
So okay, we'll go with that, and then we'll get back to it. Thank you so much. Anything else for the board? There is an update, and I want to do, Mr. Hicks, if you could provide us a comprehensive legal review of our federal lawsuits.
Yes.
We've been working on that. It's in draft. It's probably about 80% done, and we've just recently had resolve on the fact that our petition to join the Swanson versus Salazar case was denied, and so that refines one of those elements. Is we're no longer in that. It's. I want it clear how we were in that one. How we're also a party to the industry in the ONC case, not as part of the Association of ONC Counties.
Yes.
And how all of that is progressing so far. We've just had satisfaction of the petition for venue, and so there has been a little bit of resolve in the last 2 weeks. I'd say that should merit the kind of an update, a comprehensive, if that's cool.
Do we have any idea when any of these are going to come to maturity? Or does Adrian see the
It feels as though Judge Leon has woken up from his year-long slumber because he's doing stuff. He did the satisfaction of venue. It's in D.C. He did the petition to join the original Swanson versus Salazar this last week, denied. Yes. So, I mean, he got to that chapter in his...
This frustrating, I think, it's frustrating to me as a commissioner and the public in general. This stuff starts and it just goes and goes.
Well, it's hurry up and wait.
There's no end in sight. You know, I mean, these are supposed to be cases, not careers, in my mind.
I think Councillor Hicks has probably got some insight as far as, like, what is the portfolio of things that the judge is looking at? So my understanding, because Judge Leon's been hearing these issues since the mid-2000s, when some of these first issues of land use, federal land management came before him. And so, but I feel like he's probably got a lot of other things. And so he hears it, and then he goes on to the next thing. So everybody's having to potentially wait. I don't know that there's anything in our conversations with... everybody involved, different attorneys from Seneca's attorney, Mr. Krause, and Pear up at Stoll Reeves, and Kevin Davis. There's nothing we can really do as far as to get it moving. You know, we can't slip him $20 or petition for something else. There's no way. He's just hearing it as the docket is presented.
And I think the governor of Maryland supposedly wrote an op-ed at one point complaining about his... sluggishness.
Oh, really?
And then he got a ruling real fast. It was against his...
didn't work out real well.
Didn't work out.
Don't poke the beast.
He poked him, and that backfired.
I think I heard that.
Yes.
Yeah, you might have told me.
Yes.
So...
it'd be nice that going in that you would say, okay, we're going to file this lawsuit, and it's going to be determined within 24 months or something. So you have a target date. If there's no target date, you keep dragging this thing on and on and on. But I guess that's how... maybe that's how the law works, because as new, you know, as soon as you decide it's going to be done 24 months, then there's another appeal and it starts all over again.
Yeah.
Something that I'd like a little bit of insight in that I don't understand is how somebody can be aggrieved, have standing, but go out of business and lose that capacity for standing. I don't understand that.
Why didn't what put them out of business?
That sounds like serious shortcomings in our legal system that... is unacceptable. There was, talking about your timelines, in the original House Bill 1526, in the preamble element of the legislation said that there was a finite amount of time to litigate on it, and it had specific delineations that the court was required to conform to. You know, hear the case, you have to file, you have to hear it, it has to be resolved, and moves on. In like 6 months, it was, the legislation, it never got a hearing in the Senate, but it passed the House 3 times. So that's where it needs to come from, is legislation specifically outlining what the parameters to litigate on, and then you'd have, you know, an expedited.
Is there any statute of limitations on this stuff? I mean, you could drag your feet and say, "Oh, sorry, that was 7 years ago. Oh, too bad."
Well, my concern is that Judge Leon is not young, and what happens if we've been in this petition for a couple of years and the guy decides to retire? Where does our issue go? You know, start over?
Look what happened about, you know, the company went out of business and you lost your standing.
That's what happened.
You know, you just wait it out, you know, until everybody's gone. You know, I mean, people can only hang on for so long keeping companies afloat.
Right.
You know, they say, well, I've got to stay afloat because I'm part of this lawsuit and I'll lose my standing. That doesn't make any sense to me because, you know, it's just a waiting game. You can wait anybody out if you got enough money.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, that makes sense.
That's all I had.
Okay.
Thank you.
Certainly.
Thank you, Pat. Next, we have community development under Department Business, item number 2. Department of Land Conservation Development, DLCD, grant support letter. So you might remember that Schmeltz applied for, the DLCD had some funds to take a look at updating our code on resource zone properties. I believe it was EFU and Woodlot resource focused, and it's just a draft. It doesn't mean that we have to do it, but I think it points out the shortcomings between our current code and what state law has done as far as over time, since our code has been kind of languished in being updated. And so I think it's going to dovetail really well with the product that they're getting and our codification coming together, you know, by the end of the year, was something that the board could theoretically adopt that would just keep our resource zones in conformity with the state code. But there's some additional funds?
Right. So what happened is, you know, our code is pretty outdated as far as those zones go, and the state rules right now allow such things as agritourism and some of that good stuff that we don't allow. So we started with, they had the money in spring to start helping us, and they used all the money for that. It was no cost to us other than staff time reviewing the drafts. And they came forward and they said, "Hey, Julie, we have some more money. We'd like to finish that project."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Yeah, of course, you know." But they need a letter from the board saying, yes, they are in agreement with them proceeding and using those funds to do that work. So you have a draft that I sent to you that I was just hoping you could sign and then we could send to them and they would just continue that process this fall.
Does it obligate us? I mean, I don't think that it wouldn't be my intent to deviate from state law, but mm-hmm. if there is something that we can do other things in addition to it, we don't have to, we're not restricted by it. That's what I'm looking at, is what are our restrictions as far as taking?
Sure. There are some things we're restricted to, like lot size and things of that nature. We do have some flexibility in there, and some of the counties have exercised flexibility before they adopt them. We have one that didn't even bother adopting them. So we do have flexibility. We're not committed to adopting them.
Okay.
We're not committed to adopting them as is. As a matter of fact, I would like to see a little bit more flexibility on some of the agritourism things to promote some more business out in the rural areas.
Yeah. I know that the Ed King that owns King Estate, we've had some conversations about, because I remember having lunch out there years ago, mid-2000s, and they were doing a wedding a weekend. And he's like, "I want to do 3 weddings a weekend out here. I mean, it's a beautiful place and stuff." And they're doing at least 3. It's like 52 weddings a year they do out there. And it's quite a business for them. And it works out really well. It's booked out for years in advance. But there's places out here, you know, Bridgeview Vineyards and other places that would be great to be able to do that if our code restricts it. We should figure out a way to make it kind of work.
Right. You know, there's stuff going on out there. We know that is not consistent with code, but again, we are complaint-driven on that. The other thing is it's a beautiful area. we should really be doing whatever we can to capture that mm-hmm. agritourism mm-hmm. element. And this is our first step. So let's get it consistent, and then let's tweak it to our sure. Liking after that.
What about, is there any dovetail element with our mass gathering? I know Wally's left, but we have been contemplating doing something with our mass gathering ordinance for years, and mm-hmm. it is not conducive to what most people want to do. It's arcane, so I don't know if that could be
we can dovetail that in there.
Most of those are done on resource-owned properties. They're not on RRs.
Right. So. Right now you can't do a mass gathering, my understanding is, on resource zones. So, but we can address that. There's nothing in the state statutes that say you cannot have a mass gathering. The only thing is the statutes say if you're going to have a mass gathering, if it's over this many people, mm-hmm. this is what is required.
Yeah.
So we need to hone in on that. As a matter of fact, the whole mass gathering process in Josephine County is a little skewed. I mean, the form, it doesn't ask for a lot of data. The form.
I don't think
weak.
It addresses the issues that are really... So we saw a real challenge with the balloon festival out there. There was a mass gathering permit, but it probably didn't ask the right things about, you know, do you have the capacity for transportation that's not going to have people tied up for 4 hours like they're in LA traffic trying to get out or to. I think Pat was in that traffic and she's like, well, we can kind of see something that's not good.
That is one of the things that's lacking on that yeah. application.
Okay.
So we do, and that, you know, I would, you know, I have a strong tourism background, so I would like to see whatever we can mm-hmm. to help increase incomes and promote the area.
Yeah.
And I want, hopefully we'll get through that this winter.
Well, other counties are doing it, and I think we're going to be behind the curve if we don't try to keep up.
Sure.
But do it in the right way.
Any part of our scenic beauty. Use it. And I, you know, we need to really, I think you're absolutely, you know, what we have for mass gathering right now doesn't touch what's going on today. You know, we got to make sure there's no fireworks and there's no this and no that, you know.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you might have a rock concert and they have the flares and all that other stuff going on. Next thing you know, you burn the whole hillside down.
Or if you are going to have that, you have adequate, you know, fire suppression
sure.
and sign off from the fire district or something. So,
okay.
You say there's other counties that do this already. Can you get some stuff from them? So we have like a footprint to start with.
You know, I can. I'll wait until I'm done with what they give us, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because there will be more counties that adopt it in the meantime.
Legal has a couple of different drafts. There's the state requirements for mass gathering, and then they've got a couple of like counties.
Yeah. And they are tiered so that so many people, like, say, you have a wedding with 150 people. You know,
yeah.
maybe you don't need to address parking and traffic and so on and so forth.
Yeah, there's a threshold. The state's is fairly significant.
3,000.
Ours is 500, I think. And so anything under that doesn't really... But there are other restrictions, like what she was talking about, the tourism thing, or weddings at venues. And so.
I've got a really old touchy question, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. Say, for instance, you have an area that you are going to have weddings in, and the prevailing wind comes off of 10 acres of cannabis that's grown next door, and during the season, all of a sudden, you have the smell coming across there, because that is one of the complaints from the cannabis industry. What happens then?
Where's the smell coming from? What zone? It depends.
I mean, if it's coming off of EFU, permitted use.
Totally.
Then it's not a complaint?
Well, you can complain, but could be cows, could be pigs, could be anything else on EFU. It's not.
Okay.
Not the same thing.
I think that's probably a risk the operator would take, knowing that they're having a wedding on EFU in September.
Could be cows.
That's just, I think,
the wind blows right. You could be getting it from the dairy. You could be getting it from anywhere, I guess. Okay.
Yeah.
Just, I'm just trying to
think about that stuff.
Yeah, think about it.
Julia, our conversation about the no confidence. I'm not looking for necessarily an opinion because I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think looking to the Chamber of Commerce from a community development standpoint about the negative impacts that the county, as far as tourism, I'm sorry I'm jumping around, but if you had any statistics that come to your office from through the Chamber or businesses about the impact, I know that 3 years ago during the Douglas Complex, operators up there on the river were losing about $100,000 a day, mm-hmm. and it was shut down for 8 days. So you can see that those businesses losing about $1 million worth of business is not chump change to people right. who are, you know,
in that business. Another person would probably be a good resource, and that would be John Bowen, because yeah. he keeps track on the hotel motel transient issue.
Yeah, that's, we can get that data. That's okay. Tourism data is relatively...
I was bringing it up the other day to some people, and they said, well, what about the bees? You know, because the bees, when you smoke, you're a beekeeper and you run the smoke, they all go back in the hive and they become very docile and they just sit there. So was there any agricultural impact on that? You know, because of the, I've seen a lot of places that have their own bees. They have their own bees now because they can't depend on the bees to migrate around or do their thing. They keep the bees are a very important part, and I just didn't know if that had an effect.
I'm going to give you the Southern Oregon Bee Girls information. I'm supposed to reach out to her, but she'd love to hear from you, so I might
pass. Wait a minute. I thought you were the bee person.
Yeah, we're tight, but she'd love to hear from you, too. So
give me your name. I'll
call
her.
Yep. Okay. The Rural Land Development Code, RLDC, Resource Zones Update. That's what you just
we
did.
We just tied that.
And then, so proposed housing amendments.
Okay, so we've been talking about housing amendments for quite a while. It pretty much started last year when we had the first set of marijuana amendments, and we were talking about the camping that's occurring and, you know, labor housing. And then that kind of got pushed off on the side as we worked on other things. And, Dan, we've had conversations.
And the legislature was supposed to address the housing shortage in the state of Oregon, and they really didn't.
They didn't. Yeah. They failed us on that, I think. But anyway, so I do want to bring forward some housing amendments. I want to introduce accessory dwelling units. I want to do a proposal to deal with the many, many campers we have in that predate, like, 1970 that are not fit to live in. There's just a myriad of housing things I want to bring forward. So I just want your blessing to initiate an application on that so we can get drafting them, get some hearings in place, and get moving on them. It's something I would like to see happen very soon, especially since right now the way the state has passed some laws that we can have ADUs at the current time. So I'd like to get the rules on the books while that's still in effect before anybody changes their mind.
Going back to the hot phone in my office yesterday, that was two of them. Two of the conversations I had for at length were just that. You know, guys, I've got a $750,000 home, and then now all around me are cannabis groves, and every one of them's got campers. He says it looks like a mobile home park out here instead of a subdivision. It was a subdivision with rules, and there's nobody there to enforce rules. How do I get all these people out of here? He says because it's starting to. He says I've lost 20%. According to the realtor, I've lost 20% of value in my home because of that, and nobody's doing anything about it.
That's a big problem for us. It's a big issue for us. As you know, Denise goes out there and she writes the letter, but getting it through the legal aspect is the challenge yeah. there. We get complaints all the time. We even have growers call us saying, look, I want to do it the right way. What can I do?
And you have nothing to tell them.
I have nothing to tell them because of the way the state rules are written, but I have ideas on how we can work with the industry and still meet the letter of the law.
Well, see, you mentioned well, we'll go at a certain cutoff date for the age and condition, but I've seen stuff. I bought a toy box trailer that was just over a year old, and it was uninhabitable when I got it because the people had just absolutely destroyed it. But you know what I choose to live in and what you choose to live in and what you choose to live in are probably going to differ. And that's going to be really hard defining for everybody to say, it's plenty good enough for me. Well, you know, a cardboard box is good enough for the people that live down in the hole going to Tijuana. But, yeah. But you know, how do we do that?
Right, and I have ideas on that. You know, there's one is the housing shortage. When I ran the numbers when I first started, we needed 155 units a year to keep up with the influx. We're not at that. We're not getting 155. So we're falling behind as far as meeting the housing demand. Then we have the worker housing issue, and then we have the quality of life issue. So that's what I would like to address and bring forward. So
also perhaps processes within your office. Other counties have done like 50% off building permits or something like that.
Sure.
I don't know exactly what would be the right incentive, but I think we could use economic development dollars to shore up the difference. If the cost of service for any one of these permits is what it is, I think that's a reasonable thing to say, hey, we're going to knock these in, like the SDC fees that they reduced over at the city. I think that really spurred on the Red Robins and Hamptons and In-N-Outs of the world to say, now it pencils. We can actually do that development here in Grants Pass, and I think that's a lot of, you know, the economy and those reduced and the reduction in the fees kind of came together in a good win-win for everybody.
I've always wanted to, being from the construction industry, I've always wanted to lower some of the expectations on the, like, for instance, the energy code.
Yeah.
They've got the energy code now to where, my gosh, you have to have a 98% efficient gas furnace or you can't have a gas furnace. And if you can't have a gas furnace, you can't have a baseboard heater. You can't. You've really zeroed it down into the state-of-the-art everything. Now you're talking heating systems that used to cost between, you can put in just the heating system. Nope, not now, because you got to dehumidification in the wintertime. It goes on and on and on and on and on. And by the time you get done, a house no longer costs $135,000. Now it's $275,000 because I have to meet all of these codes that, in a lot of instances, I'm in the energy moving business, don't pencil out. Your return on investment of that is 23 years down the line. You'll never get the money back in energy savings for the investment you made. And if you, in a business, you don't get it back in 5 years, you shouldn't have done it. It just isn't worth it to do it. And so and we don't have a starter home that a young couple can build because of these energy codes and environmental issues all the way across the board. We don't have a starter home that, you know, a person could put out there. That's nine, you know, I'm cold, I want to be warm, I'm wet, I want to be dry. That type of a shelter type situation. Mm-hmm. Don't have anything for that. Those people need not apply. It's only the people that go from there. So this is, there's an awful lot to do in this area. Awful lot to do. But I, going back, one of the complaints I got yesterday, lady's got a wonderful backyard. She had a picture of it. And on the other side of the fence, she's in the city, on the other side of the fence in the county, up drives an old school bus that people are living in now. Is that fair to her? No.
No, and that's not legal.
And that's not legal, but what's her recourse? She can call all over the place and say, well, we just don't have the resources to go kick the people off. And I'm sure that they're there for, you know, for the trimming season, you know, for harvest season. I'm assuming that that bus will leave. But I can tell her all day long, I think the bus is going to leave. She goes, I ain't buying that for a minute. Do something about it. And
well, what we need to do is come up with options so people can meet the law and have it affordable. So that's what we hope to do.
Okay.
So I have your blessing to...
Our conversations have been pretty frank from the standpoint that I'm really not interested in what the state's perspective is on the ADU anymore. They had an opportunity. They've had an opportunity. We have a housing crisis across the state. We certainly have one in Josephine County. We're going to address it locally, and if the state wants to take us to the Land Use Board of Appeals because we enacted reasonable time, place, and manner style ADU codes in Josephine County, well, go ahead. Take us to LUBA. And maybe you can use our proposal as a model for legislation to make it legal. That's what you should be doing. That's what your job is. And they didn't do it last session.
And I think we have a situation in Josephine Jackson County, southern, southwestern Oregon, that's unique to the rest of the state. Mm-hmm. Because we have an industry here now that requires temporary housing. It requires, you know, the orchards. You know, it used to be temporary housing for the people that came and worked the orchards, and then they left. And there was no, you know, you didn't go in and say, no, this is too small. I wouldn't be able to live here. Somebody will. I mean, to them, it's what they need to live in.
Well, what I'm looking at is the tiny home having very, that movement having very little impact on you know, the carrying capacity of these. That's what we rate the ability for a piece of property to have an ADU based on carrying capacity. And a lot of these places are small enough that their impact is very, very small. It's proportional. We're not asking the state to give us authority to build multiple 2,500 square feet pieces, homes on a smaller piece of resource zone.
Right.
It's a really little impact, in my opinion. And so Julie's got some great thoughts on keeping the infrastructure, sewer and water, you know, having separations between neighbors so that they're not putting that ADU right next to their neighbor's place because they don't want it right next to their house. Or, you know, it's got to be thought out in the right way because you don't want to, but people are doing it anyway. Mm-hmm. So let's not have them illegal. Let's have the right way to do it spelled out pretty clearly and able to be accomplished. So that's what I endorse moving that forward.
Yeah. Then we had ordinance number 2017-002.
Yeah, I think when we started out this meeting saying that, you know, because Commissioner Morgan is not here, we've had a little bit of discussions about how the whole system would probably work. There's been some proposed changes to the draft, and I think we shouldn't talk about it too much without Commissioner Morgan being here because it's just a conversation.
Start all over when she's
we're going to have to reiterate, and I'm not really excited about having this conversation as many times as we've had it, and then to have one over again is not real fun for me. So she's out sick today, and but we did talk about having that enforcement element, which I think is really key, and using state revenues off of marijuana to be reinvested in the enforcement thing, which is what I think the citizens really are wanting to see, that if it's here and it's going to stay, let's have some reasonable enforcement of the current codes and regulations.
So do you want to move this to the 10th? This conversation on the 10th?
Yeah, I'm thinking next Tuesday. Is that going to work, Wendy?
Yeah. That's the 10th.
That is the 10th.
Can
we move that conversation to 10:30? That general discussion. Any objection to doing that?
I have
a 9 o'clock that morning that just got put in on the 10th.
Sure.
So that general discussion. Will be 10:30.
Yeah. Do you want to move? Well, I was going to say you might move to the afternoon if that works better for you.
I think 10:30 to noon.
Okay.
Hour and a half would be plenty of time. Hopefully.
I don't think there's anything on my.
Okay. Can I just bring up two things before we move off
to
community development? I know you had a letter you received that you were going to take under board business. I'd like to address it now. It's just regarding timelines on permits.
Oh, right. Okay. Yes. Oh, absolutely.
So you received a letter from a gentleman who received his permit 7 years ago. And he's asking for more time. And I know the question came up, why do we have time limits?
Mm-hmm.
We have time limits in case rules change. So we allow you to renew it once. We allow you to renew it another time. And after that, we say if you haven't started it, you just need to start over with the new rules in place. And the code even mentions that. It even talks about why you have renewals, and that's in case codes change. And when you renew, the director has the option to have you comply with the new codes, things of that nature. In this particular case, this was a site plan review. So he could renew it for 6 years, which he did, and then he could renew the permit, and then he could renew the permit again. Like I said, altogether, this one's been sitting there being renewed for 7 years.
How long does the initial permit last?
The site plan review, he actually has, it's a total of 6 years before he has to get the development permit. And then that development permit, sometimes they're good for a year and you have to renew in a year. Sometimes they're good for 2 years and you have to renew in 2 years.
Isn't there an element of substantial development that qualifies for the development permit to be in? We did that like 4 years ago. There's four elements like driveway, house, platform,
if you have substantial
sewer,
development, you don't have to keep renewing, is how that works.
Yeah.
In this particular case, this man, all he had to do was go start getting his permits from building safety, and then he wouldn't have had to keep renewing these. He did nothing.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a little misleading. You know, the argument in this case was he could not find a contractor, which I understand there are issues with finding contractors right now. But what he's doing is mini storage, which is routine commercial plans. I mean, you can even buy them from that, you know. So I don't know if I really buy into that. You know, this is what he submitted to you to say, oh, I haven't had time to do this. These are all mini warehouses. That's a little misleading because what he was really given the approval for was one short row, and one short row. That's all he had to get the permits on and everything, and he just did nothing.
Is that on the same footprint as the one with all the...
Yeah, this is this.
Wow.
So, I mean, we weren't asking him to do this. We were just saying, this is what you agreed to
do. But that's what he wants to do. He just asked to do that.
This is what he started.
Is he going to have to apply? I mean, how does he change? How does he go from that to that? That's like...
Well, this is like a phase one.
Right, right.
So okay. Once he starts the phase one, then he could come in and get permits for his phase two and keep it going, but nothing...
How much was phase one permits?
Let me see if I can tell you what that was initially.
Do you have to start all over, or do you get like a... Because it doesn't feel as though the burden... If there's one rule change or two rule changes, but you have to pay for the full deal.
You have to come back in and reapply with a new fee and everything again?
In this case, he would, because it's been, like I said, he's had 7 years.
I think
it was about $2,500 for that initially.
I'm looking at the 7 years that we're talking about. As you go back that 7 years, that's a downturn in construction and the economy tanked. Mm-hmm. I can't expect him, because he has a permit or he's got something in the works, to all of a sudden say, well, I'm going to march right ahead because I didn't have the private sector work. Mm-hmm. I'm going to march ahead because they say I have to, or I'm going to lose everything I've got invested. That would be my only question. He's got this investment and he started down, and there is a vast difference from what we saw versus what you have on file, granted. But, and I can't see saying, well, you know, you didn't do anything for 7 years or 6 years, because those 6 years, nobody did hardly anything. You know, it's just been recently, the last year and a half to 2 years, that we started to see growth pick up. Mm-hmm. Josephine County was a little slower than the rest of the counties in getting started, because we had a tremendous amount of fees locally that kept people said, well, I want to locate on I-5, the South I-5 corridor, and they went to either Roseburg, Grass Pass, Medford, Ashland, Center Point, and because of that, because of Josephine County's and City of Grass Pass's fee schedule, they go, well, I can be a lot cheaper if I go over there, so they do it. And so just recently, you know, that's changed around, and people are starting to look at Josephine County under a different light. But this right here, you know, I can't force him to do something within that six-year time frame. That's just the way the economy went. And he's already...
What would he need to do in order to say that the permit's vested, or so to speak?
Because I think that's... He actually has until...
I thought it was October 12th.
It's October 12th.
Right.
To pull a permit with building safety.
Just start the process?
Yeah.
For the footprint you have there, not the one that he sent us.
Does he know that? Because that seems pretty simple.
Yes, he does.
What would that permit cost?
Well, he's going to have to get it anyway.
For his original one.
He's going to have to get it anyway. He says he's going forward with this.
Okay, so what would that permit cost through building and safety for that, for the little one you have there, the corner thing, and to get him started, phase one, and then what would that permit cost, and then how long does he have before he needs to complete that? Does he have 2 years on that permit?
He'd have a year. You know, he could start, he could just pull it on the electrical. He could just pull it on the foundation. And that's going to keep buying him more time. You just have to keep showing that progress. He's saying the reason why he can't pull that with building safety is because he doesn't have any drawings. And nobody's willing to draw. You know, I thought about this, and there's two ways of looking at it. One, it's not fair to all those people that have come in and tried to meet the deadline. But I understand the concern and the scope of the project. He's asking for 6 months to get building plans. I would say if you're willing to give him any extension, let's meet in the middle at 3 months, because they're, the argument that people were so busy that, you know, he couldn't get plans drawn, that has slowed down right now. And I think he can, I can go online and actually buy plans that would meet my need for this. It's a standard mini warehouse facility.
Does he have to have an elevation requirement and engineering and all that other stuff with it? Or would that come with your online?
You can buy them designed online with that. You know, our big thing is they just have to have an engineer stamp on them. So he's asking for 6 months. Like I said, I don't think that's fair to all the people that complied and did everything the right way. So I would say if you give him anything, give him 3 months and require him to pay for the permit again, because it's not fair to extend it to all the other people, and it's also not fair to the taxpayers to ask staff to now do work to extend something that hasn't been paid for. It's not our fault that this person waited 7 years.
What's the financial burden of that?
$300 to renew the development permit, and then of course his normal fees, which he would have had to pay anyway.
Yeah. But I mean, the only other thing he's out over and above when a normal person's coming in for the first time is that original is the renewal, which would be three something.
Right. I will say this in this person's defense, he has a major violation out there. It's been out there for about 20 years, and Denise actually got him to start working at cleaning it up, and we have seen a little progress. So I know he's been busy working on that aspect of the property as well.
I don't like making specific exceptions for people, regardless of, you know, the situation. If it's a flawed policy, then we should address the policy and not make exceptions, because then you have people who did abide by the policy, and you're right, what's the incentive for it? Maybe it's flawed. I wouldn't mind. I need to think about it for a while. I already have a draft conclusion that I don't understand why there are the limitations that there are for rule changes, because there's a non-conforming element to it. Once it's been permitted and it, had it been built and a rule did change, it'd be a non-conforming use. And that's the same case if it was permitted and never built. I don't actually care if they ever built it. You know, they decided not to do anything with the property. It's just sitting there. Private sector drives that. They're paying taxes on something that's not generating a revenue source to pay for those things. So it's like there's an incentive built in to get your property to be doing something. You know, the cost-benefit analysis is the private person's responsibility, not the public sector's, to try to influence that, in my opinion.
Are any of these things transferable? In other words, he's got his original drawings and what he's applied for, and has been, I guess, approved to that. Is that transferable? If he decided to sell the property as is, and can he advertise, yeah, I've got all these permits in place to build this storage or whatever, you know, hay barn or whatever he's going to put on there. Is that transferable? Can he put that down and say and advertise it? Yeah, I've got all this stuff. I've already done all this legwork for you. You just buy it and take it from here.
Okay. Yes and no. Not all permits are transferable. For example, a household occupation permit would not be transferable.
Right. But this is
this particular one was a site plan review. This particular one is transferable.
Okay.
So do you want to revisit that?
Well, I don't want it to expire. I think we should talk about it again.
If he's due on the 12th, that's a week from today.
Mm-hmm.
So discuss it on Tuesday.
My question is when we decide, make a decision before, because then you've got to, you know, if you do it on Tuesday, say, yeah, you got till the end of the day to get these, to come in and pay X number of dollars, that doesn't apply real well either. So.
No, I think it needs to be decided one way or the other today. Do you have a preference? I'm leaning towards a 3 month meeting him in the middle with your proposal. You know,
I think a 3 months, and that would also, if you gave him the 3 months, that extended from the 12th 3 months.
Correct.
And that would give us a little bit more time, get Councilor Morgan up to speed, see what her opinion is, Commissioner Morgan, I'm just being...
At least you didn't call her Councillor Walker.
Well, as long as she's not here, I can get away with that.
Yeah.
Mute that for a second.
Right.
But anyway, that I think that would give us an opportunity to take a closer look at this. Would that make sense?
Sure. You have that ability. So what I'll do is I'll write him. I'll explain that it was extended to 3 months, mm-hmm. and the board is looking at deadline extensions in general
Rock.
At a future
policy. Great.
Yeah, okay. Policy for now.
That sounds great. Thanks.
The only thing I have to tell you, and we didn't talk about this because I just realized it today, is my department quarterly report is next week.
Okay. And you're out.
Well, I was asked to speak to a planning class at SOU, and it's that morning.
That's
so
fine.
I'll work with Monday to switch it maybe a week or something.
I don't know.
You know everything I'm doing anyway.
That'll be fine.
Okay. All right.
Maybe squirm a little bit.
I think what's going to be important is your budget update because of the earlier conversation that we had.
Sure.
So.
Okay. Thank you.
Community corrections. Thank you for your patience, Mr. Gowran. You're up. The answer is yes. Thank you very much for being here today.
Yeah. Good morning, Commissioners.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
So before you today is two items that we have. I believe the first one is the big item of drug court.
I'm sorry, I should be reading this. This is Community Corrections, Mr. Gowran, Intergovernmental Agreement 153330 with the State of Oregon and Josephine Community Corrections for Alcohol and Drug-Free Housing Assistance. Item number two is the grant agreement with the State of Oregon and Josephine County Community Corrections for Josephine County Drug Court.
Okay, thank you.
So that's the $57,000, the second one. And then
okay. So the first item is for $57,000 that we secured funding for, and we're going to use that funding for the next 2 years in partnership with Welcome Home Oregon to provide some stable housing that's free of drugs and alcohol. Currently, we're contracted with Doug Walker, who is the owner of the D Street House, that we have four different residents in there at any given time, and that's for folks that are struggling with housing, that have criminal convictions, and that we're supervising. They could be from prison, they could be from probation, but those are the folks that that really need those services. We provide them some clean and sober living, mm-hmm. and also counseling and follow up with supervision and case planning. So that's just one example of where these funds are going to go to. The other two houses that we have are the Ferguson House and the Lillis House. Those are also drug-free and alcohol-free housing that we provide in partnership with Welcome Home Oregon. So that's where those funds are going to go, and that's from the state, specifically Oregon Health Authority. So we're really appreciative of those funds.
Now, these houses, they're already bought and paid for. They're free and clear, and all you're using the money for is for staffing?
Operational costs.
And operational, yeah. Electricity and water. So.
Yeah, yeah.
And we've been in conversations with Mr. Johnson, maybe a couple of others, about using the C and 5th Street house for repurposing it for your for female?
Yeah, for female housing.
We want to
mirror these efforts that we have for the male housing with the female housing. Currently, we don't have anything in place for the females that are struggling with addiction, and we want to explore that opportunity, the 4th and C Street house. So,
I think that'd be a good location. We have some IT infrastructure in there, but I think we can secure it, get
yeah.
it kind of cleaned up down there. It's kind of been a repository for outdated IT equipment and other things. So I think that sounds good. Where are the funds? Is it similar?
We're actually going to build those funds into our CCA plan that I'll be presenting before you in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, great.
And that will be comprehensively done.
Okay.
And you'll have a chance to review that as well.
Good.
So
sounds great. I think that's a really good use for that facility, and it being located right next to your,
yeah.
you know, right there, pretty easy to maintain.
That's not two-story, is it?
It is two-story.
Yeah.
It is two-story.
Have a fire escape plan and all that stuff to get it out of there, or not?
We'll have to review the codes and make sure that it's all up to speed, and that'll be through Ryan's office.
Okay.
We also need to secure some of the areas for the basement, and and get out a bunch of the equipment that's already in there from the IT department. Yeah. So those logistics need to get worked out. But I toured the area along with Karen Caskey, who's the director of Welcome Home Oregon, and it looks like it's a fairly decent layout. Mm-hmm. Some of the challenges that we're going to run into is there's only one bathroom in there, and with four female residents, it might be difficult to, you know, gain access.
Yeah.
And also the small kitchen that we have in there, too, that may also need to be refurbished and updated, maybe even expanded. So those are some of the challenges that we see right now.
Yeah.
We haven't had a full inspection of the entire house for the infrastructure or the roof or, you know, the heating and air and those sort of things yet, but we will.
Be great if you could do maybe not another full bath, but even a half bath would be really, you know, beneficial. So okay. Well, that sounds great. I think that's a good use for that building. I know that Veterans was looking for a spot for their musical program. But
yeah, the DD214. The Veterans, in my mind, I'd love to see them go out kind of by where the clinic is out there in that guild. I think they'd get a location out there.
Yeah.
And put it all into one.
Yep.
You know, and kind of step them up a little bit. They're responsible for a tremendous amount of capital that comes into this county every year in compensation. And
their resources are going to double in size this next year, so I don't know that we need to put any more to them, but I, just on a tangential element, they were looking at the garage, and I don't think that's a good fit with your program. Yours is the priority. Theirs would be secondary, and that's not ideal for them anyway. But if it costs more, I don't know if you would want to speak to Leah, Lisa. I'm in favor of paying the delta between what they're paying right now just for the efficiency to get to their clients a lot easier. I know I see people who are pulling up and they're older and they're handicapped.
Yeah.
There's one handicap spot out there. It's a 30-minute parking spot. Otherwise, they're walking from the parking lots way down. It's just not conducive to the clients they have.
This is not an ideal location for what their program generates and the actual use of their program. I mean, they need to be far more accessible than they are in the basement of the courthouse.
So I think your stuff is free and clear to explore that whole building. That's the.
So you're right. Although she was probably looking at that garage, saying, "Well, it's something we've got, and I don't have any."
She wants a place where she can have her equipment stored in a secure area where they don't have
not secure.
Put it away every day, and
because
that's they're putting it out, dragging it out, and putting it away every day at the end basket, and that's not ideal. So.
Yeah.
Perfect. Sounds great. Your other one is Drug Court.
So the Drug Court grant, we applied for this a few months back. And just some background information as to why this is being allocated the way it is. This is for over $500,000. It's $569,000, and it's going to be spread over the course of 2 years, from July 1st until June 30th of 2019.
Statewide?
No, this is just specific to Josephine County from the Criminal Justice Commission that we applied for, and it is state funds. So they're recognizing the work that we're doing in the drug court. We're very proud of the work we're doing in the drug court. We're changing some lives there, and the state is seeing the value in investing in Josephine County in this particular program. So the way this is going to get allocated is that we're having some of the money fund the drug court coordinator position. If you'll recall, 2 years ago, we requested the Justice Reinvestment Funds fund the drug court coordinator position at the tune of $175,000, I think, for the biennia. So this funding is going to allow us to fund the drug court coordinator position, take the Justice Reinvestment dollars back from that initial funding last biennium, and then reallocate that to other programs that we're applying for currently with the state. So that explains the...
You're able to move that other justice reinvestment to other places?
Yeah, in fact, the CJC, the Criminal Justice Commission, is convening right now for the review committee of the justice reinvestment applications. They're looking at not only our $40 million allocation at 2.99%, but they're also looking at our supplemental application. And we're asking roughly almost $2.5 million out of both of those applications to come directly to Josephine County. And that's not just community corrections. It'll be for multiple different jurisdictions within Josephine County.
Okay.
I don't think I can say enough about the success of the drug court. I think having one-on-one communication on a regular basis with the whole team of people that goes together, it just feels like there's a real positive trajectory on that program. Not that the other ones don't work, but it just holds them accountable, and the success rate of, you know, people a couple hundred days of clean and sober, you know, they've got a job and they're, you know, kids are doing better, and well, it's a real success.
There's a lot on the line when that judge,
yeah,
you know, forgives that charge. Some of those charges are pretty stiff.
They're not, yeah, chump change.
They're not chump change, and you know that's the key there. You know,
so
I had the privilege of attending drug court one time so far. I've been over there.
The graduation.
The graduation is fantastic.
It is.
And lo and behold, one of the girls that was graduating, she married a really good friend of mine.
Yeah.
And I did run, and she was the one, when I was watching, she was the one that I thought, you know, well, I don't know if she's got the spine to do it. But I did run into her back to the 50s, and I said, how are you doing? She goes, I remember you. And I said, yeah, I shook your hand. I said, I need to know how you're doing. I'm pulling for you. She was thrilled. She said, I'm doing just fine. And I said, keep it out. You know, I'm going to be watching.
Yeah.
That might save her life.
It's life changing for them. It really, you can just feel it in the room. It's pretty cool. So,
there is one correction on this agenda request. I noticed on the block at the bottom, it asks the board to authorize intergovernment agreement with the state of Oregon for OHA for alcohol and drug free housing. That just needs to change to the State of Oregon Criminal Justice Commission for Drug Court Services. If you could modify that, please.
Well, Mr. Gary Rand, it's always good to hear from your program. You're doing great things over there. You know, your predecessor built a good foundation, but what you've been able to do with that program is really, it's really great.
Thank you.
Partnership with the jail and the community.
Just to note, in following his department and his management style and everything, you're one of the reasons why Josephine County is being put on the map in a positive way. When there's an awful lot of counties that are starting to slide out of you know, favor, and Josephine is on, you know, we've turned that corner, and you're one of the reasons why. So thank you very much for your...
Trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's Josephine County's performance in the justice reinvestment. It's really impressive.
Yes, it is.
Maybe we had a long way to go. Who cares? We're doing well.
Yeah, but we're marching ahead. We don't have anybody to follow the leader on this. We are the leader.
That's
impressive. There's a lot of people north of here.
Yeah.
And I appreciate those kind words. But I must say the folks that we work with in community corrections and all of our staff, they're the reasons why we're successful. They have the boots on the ground, and they're the ones that are making the difference.
They take their job seriously.
They do, and we're very blessed to have the staff that we have. So,
Commissioner DeYoung came back pretty stoked from y'all's potluck the other day. What a team. What a family.
Yeah, the pulled pork, you know, and of course, you know, it's like the sheriff winning the chili cook-off for the sheriff's department. You know, it was a little one-sided, but it was good. But it is good.
Thank you, Mr. Gagarin.
Thank you, Commissioners.
Another rising star, Mr. Graves. Item number C is airports. One contract between Josephine County Airports and Kennert Electric for Grants Pass Standby Generator, which is a great project. Item number two is change order number one for the FAA Grants 10 between Josephine County Airports and Copeland Paving Incorporated for decreased and borrow excavation for west side hangar access and taxi lane. And then item number three is supplemental agreement number one to FAA Grant 10 between Josephine County Airports and Copeland Paving to increase contract for west side hangar access and taxi lane construction.
Shed a mouthful.
Morning, Mr. Graves. I understand it was a challenge getting here this morning. I'm glad you made it safely.
Oh, yeah. Actually, they did a pretty good job of clearing out the accident, so
good. It
worked out okay. Yeah, I guess they closed I-5 north for a little while.
Wow.
Down near exit 45, big wreck.
Wow.
So what these three contractual documents are for work that's happening at the Grants Pass Airport, they're all related to grant work. Two of these are related to our taxi lane, hangar access taxi lane grant, Grant 10. And then one is a Connect Oregon grant for these standby generators. We're putting one in at each airport. So the nature of the change is for CUNER, it's the basic contract. This is within the scope of the Connect Oregon grant, and this is the contract between Josephine County and CUNER Electric to do the installation for the standby generators. Pretty straightforward. The additives, the $1,500 each, the additives are so that we can have electrical outlets inside the administration building and inside the FBO area so that during a prolonged power outage when we need access to computers or lights, that kind of thing, you know, we'll have that inside the building.
What is the generator, if you say you've got to add $1,500, have these plugs in the office space or whatever, what does the generator kick on for? Is that just strictly for runway lights?
Yeah, the generator will have an automatic transfer switch, and it's going to be located next to our electrical equipment building at the airport, and it will activate all runway lights and the fuel system, because it requires electricity to pump the fuel out of the ground into aircraft, and that's the that's basically the extent. Because of the way the current electrical panels, the circuit breaker panels, and the power drops, the different meters are allocated, it's an evolved system. It's not anything that was designed from the beginning to be efficient or anything else. So bringing that electrical power to the runway lights requires modifications to one complete electrical system. Bringing the power to the fueling system so that we can pump fuel into emergency helicopters, et cetera, during a power failure. That requires modifications to a second panel. And then there's modifications to the third panel to bring some power into the building itself, into the administration.
The key to it is, if you've got multiple panels out there, the key to a standby generator is that you're not backfeeding onto the grid. Cooking some guy.
That's why they have that automatic switch.
Right, it has I know how it works, but if you've got, I was just wondering what it covered. So, you know, I'm assuming that he's going to take runway lights, jet fuel, the fueling system, and these plugs and put them on their own panel with their own meter base.
That is correct.
So that's what you're going to feed. The rest of it all goes offline.
Yeah, the rest of it's offline anyway.
He goes back and tries to feed those circuits out of those other panels.
Right.
He's got to shut everything else off.
Understood. And these guys,
he's got it.
They have the design down, and they do a lot of airport electrical work in addition to just general electrical.
The reason I was asking, the generators are strictly for emergency. They're not gonna feed the wing heaters on so and so's airplane, hangar number 7, or
not at all,
or his pop machine that he has, or anything like that. This is strictly runway lights and refueling.
Yeah, and actually, it's an interesting note. I had originally titled these grant applications, then the grants come in, as an emergency power standby or emergency power generators. Well, there are legal nuances to the use of an emergency power generator.
Yeah.
And so standby power generator is the name of this project, and it is strictly related to keeping the airport open and operating during a power failure, particularly at night, because if the lights go out at night, that airport's closed.
You know, if there's a pilot coming in, I'm sure they're going to define it as an emergency. It's really based on where you're at,
Your fuel gate says.
What your definition of emergency is. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but I would assure you that they have taken that into account, the issues of proper electrical design so that we don't wind up backfeeding anything else.
It's 87 and change, and then our county match is 26 or something.
Yeah, about 30%.
And the difference there is made up on a grant.
Get
the grant for the whole thing?
We have a grant. I defined it when I put in the application as a $200,000 project. That was the engineering estimates, and that's for both airports. Okay, so when we received the grant, It was a Connect Oregon grant. It was a 70% grant. So we were required to come up with $60,000, essentially, on our own, somehow. Okay. The 137,138,000 that Connect Oregon gave us is being applied toward, you know, the installations at both airports. I had, in order to reduce the ultimate cost of the project, I requested that Precision Approach Engineering do the required engineering work for both installations, even though I have them essentially segregated per airport. So
yeah, that was where we had two different engineering firms.
That's right.
The two different airports.
Yeah. So we realized about a $20,000 savings by not having a different engineering company come in and start from scratch and do that installation for the Grants Pass Airport. But I still need to come up with additional money for the match, and we'll see what that match is. It's on a percentage basis. It may be as little as $40,000 that I need to come up with, but that would come from operating funds and or other sources that I seek. I did get a core grant to pay for the automated transfer switches portion of the standby generator. So I have basically grant upon grant and am still working toward reducing our costs as much as I can.
But generator's new, or can you apply for like Army surplus generators that have never been ran?
Actually, I pursued military and state surplus generator equipment for years. And Dennis Hoke and I were cooperating on getting an emergency power generator. And he literally drove his truck up to Salem and picked up a generator that we had acquired and brought it back down to O'Brien, where we were going to, and we did integrate it. We used Mike Gadd Electric to integrate that emergency generator into Station 3 down in O'Brien, okay? So it's there, and it's ready to operate as an emergency or a standby generator, and we have an agreement between Ivy Fire that if there's a prolonged outage, my maintenance tech from Illinois Valley can go down there and grab that thing, and because it's a trailer-mounted, you know, military pull-behind kind of a thing, and bring it over to the Illinois Valley Airport. But concurrently, I was pursuing the grants to try to get dedicated generators for each airport.
Ground mount.
They are. They're ground mount. They're in a.
You can hook onto it and drive away with it.
No. They're permanently mounted on a slab. They're basically in a level 2 sound deadening, weatherproof housing.
What size?
45 kW.
Well, that's not small.
Not small. No, they're about 13 feet long, 3 feet wide, 4 feet tall. And the one in Grants Pass will be a diesel power generator because we have a large supply of diesel already there. Mm-hmm. The key is to make sure that we pump it out of the ground using the generator power before that diesel tank goes dry. So, and then at the Illinois Valley Airport, where we do not have Jet A or diesel, we're going to use a propane tank to power that. So the conundrum is if we have a big... You know, the big one, say a Cascadia subduction event, 199 will be inaccessible. We anticipate bridges will be down, et cetera. So we have several days' worth of capacity, you know, in our tanks. The diesel at Grants Pass can run for 48 hours at continuous max production, and the propane tank will run for almost a week at the Illinois Valley Airport at full power. So by that time, we might be able to procure fly-in, you know, fuel stocks and things like that. So,
but you only if it's in needed. The evenings.
Right. I mean, we would not. Yeah, we most
well,
likely would.
Your computer's going to be one up to speed all day long.
Yeah, you know the. You know, we'll see. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see. There's a lot of different possibilities. We will be running the generators during the day because of the fuel pumping requirements, and I'm going to want to have my computer going during the day as well. So. Anyway, it's a good project, and this is the result of a competitive bid, and it's a good price. Okay. And I recommend that next week you guys agree with that and sign it. And I have the original wet ink signatures here from Cunard Electric, and I'll leave those with Wendy this morning. And I actually have originals on all three of these.
Great.
So
number two.
The next two are modifications to our existing contract with Copeland Paving. We are always looking for ways to save money, and over the years I've been allowing Copeland to bring in fill to the airport, clean fill off of ODOT jobs from I-5 or whatever it might be, and these are all classified, and they've been tested by various testing services, so we know what the composition is, etc. And that's paid off a little bit in that we have a requirement to bring in fill for the job we're doing at Grants Pass for the hangar mm-hmm. access taxi lanes. And so we were able to give them a lot of the fill that we already had in place at the airport. So there's a $3,000 savings that we are writing into the contract, and we're reducing the amount of the contract by $3,000 or putting in a credit. And so that's a modification to the contract to do that. On the other hand, the second contract here with Copeland Paving is... and this is, it's all within the scope of the federal grant, the 90% grant that we have to do this work, and all within the original scope of that grant. But this contract for $145,000, because we were delayed by almost 2.5 years because of a environmental review requirement on a wetland that was discovered out in our area, the scope of work changed, and we were required to rebid the remaining portion of the work by the FAA in order to get the most recent, most current definition of the work to be done. So this was another competitive bid, and Siskiyou Cascade, Copeland, and Timberland, or one other company, bid on this, and Copeland came in with the low bid at $144,905. So this is, it's not an increase in cost to us at all, because all of this is covered by the original grant from the FAA that we received in 2014.
It's just verifying that it stays within the original.
Yeah, because there was a delay in the work. The FAA understands these things occasionally happen, but they do require that we go back and sharpen our pencil once again and go through the exercise of...
Well, sure, they don't like surprises.
Yeah, and we need to rebid the portion of the work that had been delayed and was lying fallow for almost 3 years to make sure that we're capturing all the current regulations, because as you heard, with Julie, regulations change. The FAA likes to change all of their rules almost every year, so they want to make sure that, all the work they're paying for is being done to the latest regulations, et cetera. So that's why they force us to do that. And they pay us to do that. So,
well, sounds
such
good.
As it is, yeah.
What all are your? Do you have a quick 5-second review of the projects that are going on at both airports right now?
DIB. I have 10 active grants open right at the moment.
Yeah.
And I just put in a request for 6 more. So, right. Glutton for punishment, I guess, but. Okay, we have...
Before you go on to that, I had something I needed to say, and I think you've been noticed, but to make sure that there needs to be some coordination between our office when we're the grant recipient of bids and you when you have a deadline coming up of, say, 5 o'clock, that we make sure our office is open till 5 o'clock today.
Oh, sure.
Or that we know we're supposed to be receiving bid submittals.
Right.
Because I think there was a time in the last couple of weeks... I don't remember all the specifics, but it seemed as though we didn't know, and it was just people were dropping off stuff, which is fine. That's totally,
sure,
totally within the regular scope of work. But to make sure that we know that our window, we need it open the whole time, because if somebody comes up and they're like, "Well, we were there, we tried to respond, but your window was closed," or blah blah blah, that's bad on our part.
Yeah,
so we just
understood.
Need to know.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't hear about that, but typically we have like a 2 o'clock or a 3 o'clock on a Tuesday or a Thursday deadline.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
And Forestry does the same thing when they're doing their bid stuff. Sometimes they go there, sometimes they're here.
Yeah, and we'll have an official bid opening.
Yeah. Just that we coordinate and make sure that we know.
Very good.
We're receiving.
I'll make sure.
That's cool.
Thank you for the reminder.
Yeah.
I'm working with coordinating with Public Works right now, and Rob Brandis and Eric Heesacker is project engineer on the DEQ test holes that we're going to be digging for the wastewater treatment facility that we're looking to put in at the southeast end of the airport, which would support the industrial park and eventually allow us to bring in city water. So I'll be meeting with Barry Peterson, the contractor, who's going to be digging all those holes for us at 11:30 this morning.
Cool.
Out there at the airport, and to make sure that this little black line right here doesn't get cut in half.
That's a good idea. That's the power that goes through there, isn't it?
It's the power that we have that we installed for UNAVCO, which is a government educational research facility. We have seismic facilities, two of them on the airport, and they're on either side. One's on Flaming Road, the other's on Brookside Boulevard. And this facility was constantly going offline because it just couldn't maintain solar power or propane RTG power. Mm. And so we just gave up and put in an AC line all the way across that runway approach. And it's buried down 3 feet, and it's in conduit, and it's relatively safe, but and that was paid for by UNAVCO. The only cost to us was my time, you know, involved in coordinating everybody to make sure it happened right.
Barry's a heck of a nice guy.
Barry's a great guy, and he's super conscientious. Yeah. He does everything right.
He really does, yeah.
He saved our bacon when we had our water main break at the airport.
Wow.
The day before airport day.
Right?
Yeah, he was there, right there, and Dan from ProTech Plumbing. I just have to say they were awesome. They dropped everything and came out and helped us.
And, the board should send them like a thank you note. That's a big deal.
Yeah, they're getting one from me, so yeah. I'll just have you send it. I'll run my note through you guys.
I'll
send it to you.
Lily to spearhead that effort on behalf of the board. I think that makes a lot of sense.
Good.
One of the things that it came about when I was over across the pond over here. When it comes to receiving bids by a certain time, they ended up having to put a time clock in because it was a rather large contract.
Yeah.
And the girl in the office was using her watch.
Yeah.
And it was already 3 minutes after five, and she looked at her watch, and it was a minute till, so she put down 4:59, and everybody went, wait a minute, the whole world says it wasn't, because, you know.
Yeah.
So they actually put in a clock to stamp it when you receive
something. Do we have one of those in finance or something?
There's not a time clock. Not this a thing time has a stamper.
Yeah, this thing, so, you know, all things, when they come in, they, right. they you know, with by bids and contracts.
Officially.
Because these are all these contracts, and I used to do it, come right at the 11th hour
crazy.
And minute.
Yeah.
You know, because they don't want anybody else. Well, they're going to peddle my bid in the last 2 seconds. Yeah. Well, they're not. But when you use a lot, you know, this just happened over there. And they said, what do we do about it? I said, you've got to put it out to rebid. I mean, that's just all there was to it.
Well, if that
so
was the only thing
they put it out to start all over, but I said, you know what that's going to do? Everybody knows what the bids are now. So it was a sticky situation that should have been.
Oh, they opened the balls, is what you're saying. They open them all? Okay, yeah. Yeah, we'll do a bid opening, but we don't open them at all until every single one of them is verified as having been received before the deadline.
That's a good idea.
Bring
that up because that did happen. It was very, very...
Well, I think we have a universal time clock. It's electronic and it's a bit computer-based, and I think we maybe making sure that we use that as a reference, that people aren't using their watches to... We've never had that issue. We have with emails received on land use issues at 5:01, the deadline for submitting your comments or whatever is 5:00. We don't take anything past, you know, comments or contracts.
Yeah. And emails and stuff are all timed.
They're really easy to determine because
it's
right there.
This just happened. And I don't know that they ever had it happen before that, but boy, when it happened, it was
I think I've seen that clock over at the city.
And it was really sticky. And, you know, the council in an uncomfortable position because it was basically opening.
Those batteries die in a week, and you know, then you can't see it, and it's 2 days slow. So
as you know, I'm always looking for ways to save money. And so we'll send Lily's thank you note to ProTech and to Barry Peterson in lieu of payment. So what I'm here.
Put Lily's name up.
How much is it worth?
Right. What else is happening at the IV?
We are about to issue the start work notice for a very large Grant 8 out there, where we're going to put in a complete new runway lighting system, medium intensity runway lights, a new rotating beacon, lighting on the wind indicator, precision approach path indicator lights. It's you'll be able to find the airport now, which is nice.
Yeah.
And a standby generator.
That's huge.
That's going in. Yeah. That's. that's a huge upgrade to the airport that it just hasn't, you know, it, and you know, we're not looking to increase the capacity of the airport necessarily or grow it, you know, or in any way. But we're trying to make it safe. You know,
yeah,
we're trying to make
it. People
yeah, I mean, right now, when you turn on the lights, turn on the runway lights, they're bright right by the switch, and all the way at the end of the runway, you can't see them.
Wow.
I mean, because they're dim.
Gives the appearance that it's a really long runway.
Well, there's essentially 2 miles of light bulbs that are being illuminated by a 120 volt socket. Okay. And
that sounds crazy.
Exactly. And that's somebody thought that was a great idea, you know, and so that's what they did. And it was cheap, you know.
Great.
So we're replacing that.
So that starts soon?
Yeah, we were looking to start in the last week of September, and as luck would have it, Copeland Paving was the low bidder on all 3 of the AIP grant projects, and so now they're slammed and they're trying to hire new people. And it's good for local employment, but we're about 2 weeks behind the curve on that one.
Yeah. The weather's been cooperative.
Well, so far, fingers crossed, because, yeah, we don't want to be out there working in the slop.
It gets soupy and really bad, that clay. The sticky.
Yeah.
Out there. So,
yep.
Great. Thanks for all your work on this.
Thank you very much.
Grace.
See you Wednesday.
Cool. Quarterly department updates. We've got human resources with one element, and then we'll go into fairgrounds, which is item B. It's really hard not to take CW as an elected. This is our common practice.
All right. As part of my quarterly update, the first thing I have is just it's going to be a legislative change that's going to affect public health. As it relates to staffing decisions, that's why Carol's here this morning. So the Oregon Health Authority is adopting rules, and they're expected to go effective January 1st at the latest, and it has to do with how they designate who is classified as the public health administrator. So currently we have Cheryl Walker as our deputy director, and Dr. Candelaria is our administrator, and that works pretty well. But they want the administrator to be a full-time employee, and they do allow less than full-time, but the issue is things happen, as you know, all the time, any day of the week, and so they want the administrator to be a full-time employee so that they can respond to those issues because they're the ultimate authority that gives us the ability to administer the laws associated with public health.
That's a ridiculous response. I mean, having an emergency, anybody, we're all on call, 24/7, 365, whether we were part-time or full-time, the responsibility to respond outside of business hours doesn't change.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, so what I'm proposing is in the past, it's always been the director. Let's just move it back to the director.
Okay.
It's an easy fix.
Yeah, works.
Yeah, and you know, talk to Cheryl. She's already doing a lot of that anyway.
Right.
So it's really no need. There's no change. Dr. Candelaria is still a great subject matter expert. That's a resource for her.
Sure.
So the support that he's providing, he can continue to provide. But she'll be officially the authorized administrator.
It sounds like a step backwards, though, locally. Because Dr. Candelaria, having that responsibility in his title, probably feels responsible for doing that. But when he's just an on-call, ad hoc resource, now I don't have to answer that call. I have no title and responsibility. I mean, you will, but you know what I mean? There's a degree of separation between it when
he is our medical person, so he still would respond to the medical calls and to the call service, that kind of thing. So he would still be doing that. That's what he's been doing.
Sure.
And so that doesn't change his responsibility as the medical advisor for writing standing orders, making sure we have compliance with standing orders, to be on call for any kind of type of emergency that would require communicable disease or that kind of thing. So it doesn't change that position for him. And his office is right there just down the hall from mine. So
cool.
Not a problem.
I just know that my response when I'm not the commissioner on call, there's a degree of separation. No, they need to call Commissioner DeYoung. He's on call, or Commissioner Morgan. But if I'm on call, I pick it up. That's my job.
And if I wasn't there or I'm doing something else and then thing emergency, you step up.
Yep, absolutely.
It just comes with a difference.
It works.
It's actually kind of the right time to do this because we're in kind of transitional mode right now. So if they're going to make a change at the state level, rather than us go out and hire somebody, then they go, whoops, now your whole job description changed. This is actually a good time to get it done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and what I see, too, is by it being one individual, because you have already hired someone to begin on the 23rd of October, mm-hmm. that when the transition comes for that person then to assume the duties I've been doing, it'll make it a lot cleaner as yeah. well.
Sure.
Great. So, anyway, that's it as it relates to public health.
Now, are you going to issue a letter to that effect and notify the state, or do you want me to do that? Because we're supposed to notify the state sure. when we change that sure. position.
Yeah.
So...
You can do it. It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah. They just need an email saying this is the new person. It's,
okay.
It's
all right.
Easy.
Okay. Yeah. I will do that.
Thanks.
All right. Are you finished with me?
Yes.
Thanks for being here for all that.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was riveting sitting through.
You're so passionate about the airports, though. I think that was probably.
Oh yeah, I loved hearing that report. Seeing all those things yeah. that we worked on together that
right.
came to fruition.
It's got all the generator stuff down
thank
now.
You
can go.
Whoa. I don't want to leave my. No, no, it's empty.
Yeah.
Oh, no. Spilling it all over the table.
Well, the good thing I wore brown today.
So a couple things for my quarterly report. We just finished open enrollment. That's generally our busiest time of year, at least for Cecilia in my office. That's a massive project. A lot of hours in.
She does a phenomenal job.
Yeah,
her patience with shepherding me through that. I can only imagine how many people she has to talk to on it.
Well, every year it gets more complex. Every year there's more stuff. This year was a little different because we are transitioning from a monthly payroll to a biweekly payroll, and we schedule that to where it goes into open enrollment so that when she has to enter all the data, she only has to do it once. Or if we had done it any other time, we would have had to put everyone in, and then all that work has to be completely redone.
Oh, dear.
So, she's done a great job. Just finished up all of her data entry this last weekend. And so it was a fair amount of work, but it's always, she does a tremendous job. Next is collective bargaining update. So I sent the board a memorandum of understanding with AFSCME. It's a pretty nominal change.
Are you done with your report?
No, this is part of part of it. So with the biweekly transition, there is an issue associated with how we calculate part-time employees' holiday pay. So currently the contract says we base that pay, the number of hours we give them is based on the number of hours they work for the month. But if you have biweekly payroll, you don't know how much they work that month until the end of the month, which means they have to be shorted on their check until the end of the month. And we didn't think that was the right thing to do or fair, so we, instead of using this month's hours, I wrote an MOU to where we use basically last month's hours. So it's basically status quo. It doesn't change anything. It just makes it so that payroll can get their job done and our employees can get paid properly in a timely manner. So there was a little back and forth with getting AFSCME to understand that it was a pretty nominal change that basically keeps status quo as far as the the end product. It's just the process a little different. So I've given that to the board. Ultimately, the board will have to approve or deny that MOU, but it should be a pretty easy thing. It's really a status quo issue. Next, we hired a new person in our office that we share with finance. She's been doing a terrific job. She's really helped with a lot of our recruitment stuff, and now she's in the process of learning all the payroll stuff, so she'll be able to back up Sarah in finance.
Stole her from the assessor's office.
Yeah. Yeah, Chris is not very happy with us at the moment. But
no, Carla's great.
But she's doing a great job. We're very happy with her.
That's good.
And then finally, a quick update on how we are doing on our recruitment. As I've said many times, this has been the biggest recruitment push that we've had in the county in just many, many, many years. Starting off with some of the levy aspects. So juvenile department, all their management positions are in place. They have group life counselor leads. One of them has been hired, and the other two should be hired the next week or so. They're interviewing right this week. And then their projected start date to be able to open everything up is January 15th. So we said we wanted to get done in January, and it was a pretty aggressive goal, but it appears that we're going to be able to meet that goal.
Between you two, do you know the IGA or contract with Douglas County? Is it a 90-day notice? We've already noticed them. I mean, they know they know. We know they know, but have we done officially saying it might be 90 days, which feels really close to this, so we might need to be doing some sort of a notification to them formally that our contract won't be for the entire year.
Right. I thought.
Come on up, Arthur.
I think what we decided on that one was to let the contract stay in place, whether we use it or not, because we weren't exactly sure when we were going to be able to actually accommodate all the detention.
Yeah. But I think we are paying for three beds. They're not and then we have additional mm-hmm. capacity after that.
Above those three.
Yeah, but I'd hate to be, it's $300 a day. It's at least $100 a day, $100 right. a bed per, if I can't right. remember.
I thought it was as we used them.
No, it might have been. Originally,
we have three beds available to us, but if we don't use the three beds, we're not being charged for them.
That might be the way the contract is now.
So that's what I remember.
But, okay. You know, there's so yeah. many different contracts.
The original one was we paid for yeah. three, whether flat. We used them or not, yeah. flat.
Right.
And then we had capacity after.
But so, I'll check with Jim to make sure.
Yeah, let's just yeah. cross that, yeah. check that box.
Moving to the Sheriff's Department, so all the resident deputies are in place. Most of their positions have been hired, and they're going through the background check process. It's a pretty lengthy process where they have to do psyche valves and a bunch of stuff. So you know, you hire an officer, and they're not actually in place for quite a while. But most of their positions have been hired. Their projected complete full staffing should be done by January 1st. And in all likelihood, a little sooner than that. So things are going pretty well with them.
So it shouldn't take long if the board goes forward with the proposal we discussed mm-hmm. earlier this morning to allocate funds from the revenue source from the cannabis shared receipts and stuff for one more deputy. Or it could change, you know, depending on how. But at least one sounds reasonable to me to yeah. be a partner in that program of enforcement. And there's probably capacity, yeah. you know, other resumes and stuff.
Yeah. So I'll have to, and we'll chat with Dave to see what, you know, what is that, what How should it look fit. Like? What, yeah. you know, should it be a someone that has a certification of patrol, probably?
Right, right.
So, and how it'll work. But yeah, I think adding another one shouldn't be a big burden.
With the yeah. civil serving, the papers.
Yeah.
He'll figure it out.
But I don't expect it to be a
okay.
long, cool. burdensome process. So a little over a month and a half ago, we implemented a new applicant tracking software, NeoGov, and I have a little chart here to kind of show the success rate. And I expected probably a 20 or 30% increase in applications, and it hasn't even been close. It's been 200 to 300% per application. The little chart I have is, so in the calendar year of 2016, Human Resources processed 896 applications. In a month and a half, we processed 1,175. So
these are job apps?
These are applications that have come into my office. So in a month and a half, we've done 30% more than the entire calendar year of 2016.
And what I've heard from the managers is that they're seeing people that are really qualified.
Yeah.
So I think that's really great.
Yeah. I mean, we do get more apps of people that, you know, they're on unemployment. Don't they just want to, you know, click a couple buttons and there you go. It's easy. But if I go from, you know, 30 apps to 130 apps, sure, you'll get more not great apps, but we also get more really good apps. So we're reaching a broader applicant pool with this marketing strategy.
Well, I look at it from the standpoint that if you don't have very many applications for a job, it's because people don't want to work for you.
Yeah.
And the more applications you get, people say, you know what, I want to work for Joyce McKevin.
Yeah.
I do want to. I see, you know, I think there's a big psychological side of that.
Yeah.
Can you crack that door just a tad? It just needs to be somewhat ajar, if you wouldn't mind. It's unlocked, but thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that go into that massive upswing. Part of it is, you know, the levy pass, and I have a lot of positions. And, Community Corrections has done a terrific job of levying the state and getting some more funds, so they're expanding. And you know, Parks has done a really good job and managed their finances really well, so they're adding a couple positions.
Yeah,
so
all of our programs are doing phenomenally well.
So, you know, a lot of it's just, you know, there's a lot of good management that's allowed people to make decisions we haven't been able to make in the past. We didn't have the revenue. Part of it is we implemented new software. You know, so there's a lot of things that go into
coming
it.
Coming together all at the same time.
Yeah, but ultimately, it's, you know, you look at the numbers and it's you know, 10 times more recruitment than we typically see.
Great. Well, thank you.
That's it.
Cool. I don't think I have anything. I need to take a break, if you're okay with that.
What's that?
Just 5 minutes or whatever to use the restroom real quick. Do you mind?
Sure. Yeah.
So at 10:44, sorry. You bet. We're reconvening at 10:47. Item number 3B, Fairgrounds, quarterly update.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. As you know, we had a fair. And when it was all said and done, looked I haven't seen the final numbers for September yet, and that's going to really break everything out. I have a few little straggler bills coming and going, but not very much.
Yeah.
It felt just about, and from what I'm seeing on the financials up through yesterday, it looks like we were just about where we were last year. We were down at the gate about $5,000 for the money coming in through the physical gate itself. But that being said, we were up on food vendors. Our carnival was up. We saw a definite increase in revenue for all of those. And through about yesterday, it looked to me like I was about $11,000 in that program down. But remember, I have not received my $56,000 from the state.
Mm.
So when that's all said and done, you know, we're definitely going to be up in the fair.
Great.
So that feels good. I know that that's coming in February. That traditionally comes in the first week in February.
What's your assessment on the free day? Free day at the fair.
I can see
that as a real double-edged sword.
It was a real double-edged sword.
Which side of it?
It was. It was. The people loved it. The vendors loved it on that day. But what it forced everybody into was, from what I'm seeing, they had great days that day. But the rest of the week was a little bit sparse because I think that people waited to walk in the gate that day. And so, but community-wise, and I think as far as advertising and everything, it was a real win-win for the customer out there. There has been suggestions that, hey, why don't we look at maybe, and I have not confirmed that that's going to happen again for 18.
Mm.
I know that they are definitely sponsoring many things for me in 18.
Yeah.
Not sure that that's going to be part of it. The one conversation that has come up probably the most is maybe you could just have kids free up to 16 years old the whole time. And that might be a better consideration. Mm-hmm. And so I still do need to talk to AllCare about that.
Okay.
But I think overall, I'm up from last year is what I believe. So
I suggested last year, but it was right at the 11th hour that you have ticket books that merchants could buy. Like, for instance, Roe Motors could buy a family ticket book, you know, kind of like Disneyland. You know, they give you buy a ticket book for $189 for the day or something of that sort. And make it so that not necessarily a great big sponsor could sponsor a bunch of things, but the Active Club, for instance, if they wanted to buy a ticket book and give it to kids, you know, buy so many ticket books, you could care less what they do with them, but you get the revenue up front, like Armband Day type of situation. Only have ticket books that you get various people could buy. I think they get a lot of people. Employers that would possibly buy those ticket books for their employees is kind of a perk during fair.
Well, actually, we do that already.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
What we do is we offer, it's been in bulk at this point, and I have sold it like to Southern Reagan Sanitation and places like that have a fair amount of employees. Even though he's a sponsor, he's going to get some day passes to come in. But like a lot of places have safety awards. Let's just use that as an example. And so if you commit to 100 tickets, we sell them to you at the vendor pricing, which is $5 a piece. And so we have basically done that. And we have sold up to, I don't know, I probably sold 6 of those this year that were just, you know, in bulks of 100 or more. There's been 2 companies in Medford that have done that, that have bought our tickets, and they've given them out to their employees. So
I wonder if you could do it in smaller denominations than 100.
We probably could.
You know,
we'd have to look at the price structure on that a little bit. The whole idea is to get people in through the gates.
Well, sure.
To support our vendors.
My mind, it would be to get more of your local businesses involved in fair.
Well, I think that's a really good promotion item, a promotional thought. It would probably need to be, like you said, smaller than 100.
Mm-hmm.
We just did it on the 100 because that's what the board had talked about.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're talking about online ticketing possibly for maybe not next year for the whole fair, but because I have already got a commitment verbally on a national act for next year. It has not been named. We're just starting through the process right now. I meet with the entertainment director up in Albany at the end of the month when I go to OFA. My person that wants to back this national act is going to be anonymous, does not want to be recognized for this at all, and but also wants a little input in the act. So that is going on as well. But the online ticketing, if we do that, the whole crux of it is they would like to see us be able to build something that could actually be a separate ticket from the fair. Maybe it would involve admission, but it would be a separate ticket from the fair so that we could actually afford to have main stage entertainment every year and be able to sell seats. But it's got to be somebody that's going to sell the seats, not just, you know, it's going to have to be a fairly high caliber act. So we have that going on. So Sapphire's going to come down, who we did our website with, to go through what their online ticketing looks like right before the Oregon Fairs, to, for everybody to see how it works,
well,
if it's anything we're interested in
just,
doing.
Just in the promotional side of it, Country Crossings is already advertising for 2018.
Right, right.
They've got
their list and
entertainer right out there, you know, and they're already pushing that.
So, well, we're moving forward, and we've got a couple grounds acts secured already for 2018, and then that's one of the reasons we go to the Oregon Fairs is to finish that piece up. JJ was talking about applications. We normally, I have a half-time maintenance position that's out there because one of my longer employees has left, and so we have a half-time position out there, and normally I might get one applicant for that, and I had 11.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I sent a guy out to you the other day. I don't care if he showed up.
He didn't talk to me.
So
that's all right. But I want you to know that that is working as far as that goes.
Have you guys had a fair board meeting recently?
We have one. We had one last month, but I didn't have numbers because, you know,
no,
we're
I
working.
Just, is it, I think it would be, well, something I'd like you guys to consider is the, a Sunday. Operating fairs until Sunday, just evaluating that. There are fairs in the state that
yes, there is, and they're
that.
Very successful.
And for me, it seems like a no-brainer to take advantage of a weekend day. I know that.
Well, on Sunday, everybody's off on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
a lot of people work Saturdays.
Yeah,
we've encouraged businesses to stay open on Saturday
That's
and
true
Sunday.
Too.
You know, a lot of business. Well, I'm just going to. But in my business, I worked a half a day Saturday, and it was really successful. So.
No, we will.
Feels like
I'll throw that.
A real positive thing. I know that it was my suggestion to cut it down to 4 days because it just felt like a really long, extended time, and
Thursday,
people were
Friday,
burned
Saturday,
out
Sunday.
By Saturday. But if you short up one and you extend it on
So you're
Monday,
thinking of the Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday as versus
no,
Wednesday,
I don't,
Thursday?
No, I don't know.
Okay.
Sunday's the thing.
Okay.
I don't know what you want to do with Wednesday.
Okay.
That's up to you guys. But
okay.
I do think that the idea of another weekend day is
well, that's when things
if
are going
I were running
on.
A business,
it puts a little bit more of a strain on the vendors because they can't break down until after Sunday after say 4 or 5 o'clock.
It doesn't have to go till
right.
Late.
It does not have to.
Evening.
Most
it
of them end at five, I think.
Something to that effect,
yeah.
But just being a weekend day where people have you know they're sitting around, they don't have anything to do. Possibly, I mean that would be a great thing to do.
I would need to talk to the people that I've already committed to as far as Grounds Act and the reptile world and things like
about
that.
It now.
Well, I will definitely put that on the agenda. We have a meeting on the 24th. It's the Tuesday before I leave on the 26th, so it's the 24th.
Yep.
And then we have a workshop next week to start talking about the master plan,
mm-hmm.
the long-term plan, and then we have another one set up for a Sunday on the 19th of November. That's been set for 6 months. So we've got that going on. Have had a lot of discussion with Ryan about the arena, and I know that he has talked to you all about that on his report as well. And, the thought might be that we really need to get someone in there to actually evaluate that building. And Ryan was saying that it might be time to look at maybe combining the 4-H building along with the indoor arena, make something bigger that you can section off and use for multiple different types of events. So I don't know how we start that process with the county, but I'll talk to you about that to at least where we move forward and go from there. The other thing that we talked about is that we haven't had a rate increase on our buildings for some time, and now that we've upgraded Floral, Arts and Crafts, and the Pavilion, it might be time to look for a small percentage of increase, since obviously we are in the need of the financial piece of it. So that's on the agenda as well in the next 2 weeks. The other piece was, as I was putting together my Oregon Fair report, and I think I'd shared part of this with you yesterday, but it was pretty amazing to me as far as private events that we have at the fairgrounds. We actually track what we do. We put it on a spreadsheet. We take an estimate of how many people show up. But we actually had 342 private events at the fairgrounds. We had 975 public events. And I think that sometimes people don't understand when you have over 200,000 people that come through your grounds every year. And, you know, and that's including the fair. But there's a fair amount of traffic out there. They don't always see it. But it's definitely there.
70-something acres.
Right, right.
Not like Riverside Park where you pile everybody in.
Right, in one-to-one spot. Exactly, exactly. The other thing is that I think I touched on this some time ago, that when I was talking to other fairs, the fair managers get together and we have kind of a round-robin type thing where we go around and we all ask questions that maybe are not always comfortable. Almost 50% of the fairs currently receive TRT money. And I really would like to see us at least have that conversation. You know, if you looked at 8 cents or 8 and a half cents, apparently years ago we used to get 8 and a half cents at the fairgrounds until everything fell out of the bottom here as far as the timber money went. And, you know, you're looking at about $560,000 if you did 8 cents on the thousand. And if you put that straight almost all back into the grounds, you'd be able to do some upgrades on those buildings, and we wouldn't be struggling every time we turn around to do upgrades. So, I was surprised that almost 50% of the fairgrounds received that kind of money. Klamath Falls receives almost $650,000 a year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's huge.
We just need to task somebody to do it. We don't have any, you know, it's not necessarily your responsibility. It's not Arthur's responsibility. It's not yours, and it's not mine.
Right.
It's somebody's.
How do we, okay.
We're working on it. I mean, we're doing the legwork on the background information for it, but it takes somebody to
drive it.
Yep.
I agree.
It's a great point, though, and I think it's really the determining factor for the future of the fair. What you've done in Mary Groves and the fair board is great. It just, that's almost you're at capacity. You need another revenue stream, mm-hmm. just the
we
same
do.
Way that airports does to meet these 30%, 20%, 10% grant applications. He isn't meeting it. You're not meeting it on your rentals. And, you know, it's that fine line between increasing your rates, which you're going to have a...
But you can't do much, or you won't be able to rent your building.
But your need is huge, and so you're always going to have a delta. And that needs to be shored up some way. And until we address that...
Sustainable funding has just got to happen.
Until we address that issue, me putting resources into a roof,
right.
new
oh,
stalls, there isn't a vision for funding it long-term. How do we do it? You know, it's very simple that has to be done.
Timing of these things is everything. We got 13 cents a thousand coming off because we paid off the jail bond.
I think she's speaking of not looking at a general. I will never support a general fund appropriation at our 58 cents for the fairgrounds.
Can you have 8? Can you have 8 cents? Can you go to the voter for 8 cents a thousand dedicated to the fairgrounds, as you do a library or the animal shelter, for instance?
I think that what she's talking about is an alternate proposal for revenue stream. A TRT has the potential to probably shore up most of the difference. And, you know, it may not be $600,000, but it could
be
countywide,
four,
which would be substantially mm-hmm. more. Yeah, yeah.
That's countywide.
Mm-hmm.
So, in other words, New Hampton Inn up there, it would apply to them?
Right.
There's two different
or
ways
just
to...
Or just outside the incorporated
it
city.
It could be both, and it could be the latter. But we'd have to, you know, that's part of the proposal.
I don't know how many rooms we have outside of...
There's more than you think. That was my proposal. That was my stance 2 years ago.
Okay.
You start adding it up, and there's a fair amount out there. So let's...
Okay.
We'll talk about that one.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's, you know, I was just... when we did the numbers about the numbers of people that go through there... we have different facilities calling us all the time. Do you have availability here and there? Because they don't, these smaller venues. And we're almost at, I mean, every weekend we've got events going on. I had a horse show call me that we're looking to do a three-day horse show in April or May. I could only come up with one day in May. I had nothing in April. Because we already work with Team Oregon. We work with the posse. We do clinics. We do, you know, and then we'd have the equestrian teams during the week when we have four of those.
You are making decisions using the posse as an example of a very limited funding mechanism. You know, their capacity
Pay. Yeah, right.
There also comes with the capacity that, like, that date's not going to work anymore because we've got somebody who's interested in coming in here.
For a real paying customer.
Well,
they
do that, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Because Commissioner DeYoung is glad to have that conversation with the posse that says,
"Oh no,
thanks for everything you do, but you're going to go do it on Tuesday."
Yes, I'm glad.
He's dying to have that.
I will be glad to have that at the chair.
Well, you just can't turn down paying.
I can't.
For people who are, you know.
Well, and that brings up the fact is the amount of people that believe that we still receive some kind of funding from the county. And every event is good, and I understand the nonprofit piece of it. And we all belong to different organizations that do things. But you have to pay to have your event there. I can't help it that it's the best thing in the whole world. I have costs to cover.
Yeah, you wouldn't be there if you don't cover the costs.
Oh, I won't.
No.
And nothing's free. Sorry, but nothing is free.
It's a cardinal law of business. Don't give away what you're selling.
I think it's a great opportunity every time to tell people about, you know what? That's why we fight so hard for timber dollars. You don't want to pay for it in your taxes. You don't want to pay for it in your fees. Mm-hmm. We used to generate revenue and have fire-resilient forests. Yeah. Don't want to do that anymore. That's fine. Y'all going to pay for it. Those are the rules. Nothing's free.
When I was in business and I was asked to donate something like to a silent auction or something, you know, why don't you give a thermostat? Or why don't you? I said, because I sell thermostats. I said, I will give you two tickets down to Hell's Gate Excursion, and I'd go down and buy two tickets in my name, and that would be something for the auction. But it helped other businesses down. But I am never going to put a price on what I'm selling unless you're buying it from me.
Mm-hmm.
As far as a gift goes, oh, yeah, this is worth $75. The guy goes, I had to pay $125 for mine. Say, no, you never give away what you're selling. Mm. Always something else. Don't give away Disneyland or something of the sort, but don't ever give away what you're selling.
And then I also want to bring up again that we're doing a board workshop next week to start about the master plan, and then we have a big in-depth one in November that have been on the books. So we're definitely moving forward. Go to Oregon Fair at the end of the month, finish some of our buys, continuing on the roof discussion with Ryan. He's been a good partner with us. And the other piece of it is remember that we are the evacuation center at the southern end of the town. We have the ham radios that are set up there now. And as far as the Red Cross, we've now been approved again. Apparently we were off their list for a little while for the people part of it, not the animals. But now we're back on target with the animals and the people. So,
what's the latest on Love Abound?
He has executed the lease. He is moving forward. He has given me the half a payment from from September 15th to the 30th, and then my full payment in October. I've already received. And they've already done some drawings on the front of the grandstands of what they'd like to see it look like, and it looks very, very good. They'll be bringing it to us shortly, which we all will be viewing. And they're moving forward.
But you like the way they had that all bladed off for the fair. That
it looked
so
wonderful.
Nice. It looked really nice. Plus, it just dealt right into the parking.
Well, it did, and it was interesting. I got the bill accidentally, and it wasn't my bill, that was a $10,000 donation right there. It cost him almost $10,000 to have that bladed off. They found car parts and everything else in there. There was things dumped in there, and so, they're moving forward.
They have parked bogs out there. Parts fall off the cars. That's why you don't have a car racing on the track. Parts fall off the cars. Right. They fall off of motorcycles.
Well, and we are definitely going to do some tractor pull or truck and tractor pull. I mean, that was a huge void. And I understand the people for getting concerned about that, but we really didn't know what was going to go on in the outfield. And once we've made the commitment that they're going to go forward, I mean, they're great community partners. They gave out during fair on Dutch Brothers Day, which was Saturday, I think they probably gave out 400 cards for drinks, you know, and it didn't take away from anybody on the grounds because they went to a, you know, to a stand to get a coffee. So, I mean, they're definitely moving forward. I have not seen anything in writing of when they actually are going to do anything with that, with the infield. I know that it's coming. They're still having assessments going on. Mm-hmm. So I'm just assuming it's moving forward because they're paying for it and they have assessments and people are out looking at it all the time.
Okay, good.
So your long range or your vision thing, I think that's great. It's a long overdue conversation for the Fair Board. It's really important to understand, in my opinion, that the Fair Board is one cog in the spoke, in the wheel. That ultimately the board makes those kinds of decisions.
Right.
But the recommendation by the Fair Board is so key, and having it, you know, it really needs to kind of dovetail. And I think Commissioner DeYoung's going to lead that charge from the fair standpoint. But having a vision for where you want it to go and what you want it to look like, I'm certainly just one player here, but I'm also a short timer in that, you know, I'm only going to be here for another year, and this is a long term project.
Right.
Ultimately, I think most of it really hinges on moving public works and putting something in there that dovetails with the fair grounds really well. Because if you don't have more to add to it, I don't think it's the right spot. If you bring in a like use, then it works, and it all dovetails, but otherwise.
Well, the reason I would like to see some kind of a vision, especially when we get ready to talk in redevelopment agency over next door, mm-hmm. we have to have a project on the ground floor of that redevelopment agency. You just can't come in year five and say, okay, now we want to add this. Those have to be named at the outset of that, when they decide, okay, we're going to do this, and this is the area it's going to do. What do you want to do in there? And then you have to have a project in online, at least something, a concept in there, and for them to shoot for. And then as the money comes in, you go, okay, I want to satisfy this project, that project, and these are the ones I want to build. But you just can't come in later and say, oh, by the way,
right.
I want. So that's why I think it's imperative that we have a forward look at mm-hmm. What do we want? Because we already planted the seed over there, and we did it on Channel 5, and we did it at our joint meeting, to say, you know, that we want to be involved in that redevelopment agency with some sort of growth and project for the fairgrounds. And so that's where we need to kind of be targeting what we're going to do if we want to do it, if we want to be part of that process.
Where does it play into, like, with forestry and transit and the extension office that's sitting there and the bus barn? That's part of that acreage, isn't it? Isn't that part of that whole piece?
All of those.
I think you and I kind of talked about it a little bit yesterday, a possibility saying all that goes away and maybe that becomes retail and use some of the money from that to
help sustain the fairgrounds.
A really modern fairgrounds, you know, because you're going to have Dutch Brothers out there for probably
time.
What we have to look at is perpetuity, plus the grandstands, and YMCA is not moving. So what do you take what is now actually fairgrounds and not bus sheds, not commissary, not District 7 or Three Rivers maintenance shop and you know, all of that, and the road department, take all of that out and change that into something commercial that helps to fund the fairgrounds. Something along that line.
Mm-hmm. Sustainable funding.
I see value in the fairgrounds. Fairgrounds staying where it is. I just think there's way too much involved in there that is not the fairground.
Right. Well, and we're pretty landlocked. We're pretty landlocked. It doesn't sound like it, and people don't think it's because it's such a big piece. But you really are landlocked. What you can do with the fair, with the fair itself, because you've got the midway and you've got the little spots, but you don't have anything out on the outside.
Working with the city, I mean, if their long range plan, because it is in their redevelopment agency, is to say maybe buy all those houses that are along the river. They already own Tusink Park, and quite a ways both ways from Tusink Park. Buy those houses and so on and so forth, and that might be where you could probably get some really good interested parties. If you offered that whole vista of the river for a hotel and convention conference center, convention center, so on and so on. You've got Allen Creek that I think it's Allen Creek that runs down through there. I mean, it could be a beautiful, beautiful place down there.
Well, and it's already started with that west side where you've already got BMX and you've already got the Y and you've got Travis and you're all now moving forward that way. I'm talking about
something like River's Edge in Bend.
Right.
That's a 40-year-old facility and it's booked solid. You know, we had League of Oregon Cities there 1 year. Boy, they were able to handle everything on ground.
On spot, yep.
And you know, with using in conjunction, we had really nice facilities in the fairground. You could host something like League of Oregon Cities. Instead of going to Bend, Oregon, it could come to Grants Pass with a river view and adequate banquet facilities and everything in conjunction with the fairground. And it could be a fantastic end of town. But it takes a long-range vision, and then it has to become attractive to somebody like Hilton or Red Lion or Ramada or somebody like that that has to would say, we can have all that? You bet. We're going to buy all those houses, and we've got Tusink Park down there on the bottom, and so on and so on and so on. Because that's what River's Edge does. You can walk the grounds at River's Edge and wander around in there, and gosh, it's just fantastic. We could do basically the same thing here if we think ahead.
Think ahead.
Thank you, Peggy.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. O'Hare?
Thank you. I have five mental health contracts that are all renewals of existing contracts. It's just the new biennium, so just quickly.
They're fairly routine.
They're routine. They're just a renewal for this biennium of existing programs and contracts that we've had.
They're all passed through.
Exactly. 100% of the funds are passed through from State of Oregon to the county to options.
Great.
So all five. Are okay. Just in that same boat.
Excellent.
Then a reminder that I will be at conference next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Sandy will be here. The conference is in Portland. It's the annual conference of the Municipal Finance Officers Association. Riveting topics we talk about, just electrifying.
Sounds like it. Commissioner DeYoung and I think at a general discussion earlier this week, I don't think Commissioner Morgan was there, was talking about the proposals for our office and having, or at least administration coordination, stuff like that. And I don't know really where, who to drive the conversation. I'm not in favor of spending another general fund dime on the board's office. So any proposal that comes from that angle, I just can't support. I think the staff that we have and the positions that are outlined, they may not be perfect, but they're getting the work done on the board, and that's my priority. Number one, anything that board members need, from my perspective, they need to be accommodating on their own. These are the resources, these are the tools in the tool chest that we're given, and any kind of little internal tweaks we can do, that sounds great, but more than that, I do feel like there's a reoccurring theme of a need for somebody to task with large projects that are ongoing, that frankly we languish significantly from every program. Every single program we have has elements that are outside of their scope and responsibility. They're outside of the scope and responsibility of the board and yourself, and we're paying the price for it. It's something that I have to be very conscious of. It's very similar to the property management position that I didn't want to fill 5 years ago when Chet left the county and we didn't renew that. And it works for a certain amount of time, but then you're losing ground, and we're definitely doing that. I don't know how to move forward with that, but we need to. And so I know Coos County is looking at some options, and so is Klamath and some others. The time is right, and I feel like the ISF fund is the right place to go for paying for that kind of operations person. Mm-hmm. So I'm in favor of looking at refining the job description, I think, as JJ put forward. I'm talking to you because I think the financial nexus is the most important driver for saying yay or nay. Mm-hmm. And the capacity to have those ISF funds at our current rate for a sustained time frame is there. And so they need to be reinvested in a facilitator
that benefits all programs because they're all paying for it.
Well, I think just the one aspect we talked about here this morning on the transient room lodging tax, we're leaving money on the table right now. And it wouldn't come out of the general population, the current citizens or the constituency of the county.
No.
We're talking about tourists and people.
And it's a routine cost people incur everywhere they go.
They're expecting. So
one thing that's always brought up is that, okay, you don't have timber dollars, but you have tourism dollars. Tourism does not do anything. And they're a liability rather than an asset when it comes to government.
County, yeah.
And whereas the TRT would probably help out with that, because that is aimed directly at people visiting here, which is, I think, you know, not a bad way to go. The thing that I find...
And it's a fraction of what we used to. Timber was doing $14 million,
but
we're asking
we're
for...
We're going to need... Yeah. Tourism is one, you know, perhaps the cannabis industry is another. We're going to have to fund it. I don't think there's any one thing that's going to come along and replace the timber industry.
Right.
It was so huge when it was going. But I don't, you know, no mills to take the stuff to. I'm real concerned about it's ever coming back to what it was before.
No.
At the percentage of what it funded for county. But one of the things that I see in the continued operation, by design, every 2 years you have the opportunity to all of a sudden, this year, you got two new bosses. Wendy, you got two new bosses. How long does it take for us to get up to speed? And you can, while we talk about that project, how many times have we come to here and said, well, I've never heard of that. Well, that was last year, and that was a project we were moving forward on. Now we've got to convince you two that it's still viable. Mm-hmm. And I see the continuity aspect of having one, like a drumbeat. The music can go all over the place, but you're still tapping your foot to that drumbeat.
Yeah.
You know, and that to me, that's very important. And that's just, I think we just need to get above that hurdle of saying, well, that's what we want as a board. That's the piece that's missing of the puzzle. Yeah. We all agree on that, and then we move forward and find out what exactly that's going to do.
Somebody
and
needs to drive this issue. The clock is ticking. I'm here for,
you know.
Anywhere of a matter of days, months, weeks, you know, who knows? So I would think that, for me, handing the baton to some sort of structured, long-term cadence kind of deal makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Because the triage that you guys are dealing with right now, to a degree, I think it takes a term for you to get up to speed on everything.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't anything that comes up nowadays for me that I haven't seen before. But that 7 years into this deal, and he's been here a long time.
And every day is an excitement for me.
Right? So somebody's got to bridge that gap. I think that's really important. So anyway, whatever I can do.
Let's not just let that die on the vine. I think we need to push that.
Okay. I'm going to leave that kind of in your wheelhouse, if that's all right. I'm here as a reference, but I feel like it's not the tool for me.
It's not the tool for you. It's not,
It's not my tool anymore. I don't need it. I'm dialed in. I would love it for the five projects that I want to have well on their way before I leave office that I've not had the capacity to deal with. And, not for lack of trying. I think one of the things...
Well, I think, you know, when we originally started talking about this, we were talking about a project manager, you know, that somebody that would be able to listen to all three. Commissioner, what do you want to do? Like, for instance, mine's going to be, you know, a deal I've got going through. Okay, well, I'm okay taking that, but I also need somebody that can, while I am shifting off to routine business here and changing gears on 17 different subjects, that somewhere in the background somebody's continually pushing that forward, continually moving it forward. And rather than it coming to a halt because I have to think about something else, and then I got to go back, and that's one of the slowdowns in government that I think is frustrating to the electorate. They said, "Gosh, it's going to take you forever to do this." And, you know, we're seeing a little bit of that with this cannabis thing and the cannabis amendments. For Pete's sake, they're going, "Hey, we told you in May what we wanted. Now here it is, November almost, or it's October, and you're still talking about it." So that's frustrating to them. If it's frustrating to them, it's certainly frustrating to me. And I think it's frustrated everybody. But
and I don't think we get the best product.
No, I don't either. But it needs to be moved along, you know, as long as you keep pushing that deal. I'm on the cruise ship, but I'm going through the Panama Canal, but there's always that tug pulling me forward.
One of the things that I think is important is that we have this state of the county address, and I think it's probably not going to happen the end of this year. It may make better sense in the beginning of
I think January,
but we need to put everybody on notice that these sheriffs already endorsed the idea, loves the idea of getting up and having you know, staff ready, everything implemented to a degree, but being able to report on it.
I've worked for the sheriff. I find him to be a man of few words.
But important, those he chooses. So the same thing, I think, now preparing for something of a, you know, everybody getting 5 to 10 minutes and giving their spiel would be really, really great. And the other one is I'm looking to the board for noodling on the idea of a customer service survey and in just two programs, Public Works and Community Development. I was at Grover's the other day, and they have a little card you can pull up. It's optional, you know, and it's anonymous. And they tell us what you liked, what you didn't like, what you could see, you know, where we could improve. Mr. Hart has actually been the most probably consistent person to do with that. You need this other person in order to carry out whatever it is that your customers are telling you. You need to be able to act on it. And I wouldn't want to do a survey that didn't have there isn't the structure to react to it, and that would be really important. But I think those two programs are overdue for a survey of how our clients feel we're doing and ways to improve. The city did that a couple of years ago, which I thought was really good, but it wasn't anonymous. It was your client sitting in a room, you know, and I don't know.
They did it for the construction side of it over there, and if you're a contractor, and you know darn well you're going to go in there and say, well, I don't like this, 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 and this. And they go, oh, yeah? Well, when do you get your neck permit? And that is the perception, is that they got me on my next job. I'm not going to say anything because I want my next job to go through smoothly. I have been a victim of that. When another company in town was absolutely, I took a picture of a house up by my place. I said, how many violations do I see in this picture, Laura, versus how many do you see? And who put the job in? It is, and it's right on the street. I'm sitting at the stop sign going, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah.
Because why? The company that did the job, it just, oh, we love planning, and why everything goes through exactly like I want it to. But the minute you say, you know what, I'm going to bring that up, they say, oh, yeah. So you're the rat, huh?
What's your name again? Can you spell
your
last?
Yeah, what's your name? Is that a big D, little Y?
That's why you have to have that degree of separation.
It is. I think that anonymous, non-anonymity or whatever it is, I think that's important.
Anonymity.
I think you're going to get, you'll get a product that you can use after.
Yeah.
But you won't if you have people sit in a room and say, well, yeah. And the thing is, have you ever polled your contractors to see if you're doing well? Yeah. So they check the box. They did? Oh, sure we did. But how did you do that? Because it's not going to give you what it'll give you what you're looking for, which is you bet, we're doing just fine.
But this is another example of where the results of that kind of a survey need to be assigned to someone who can then follow through on those. Yeah.
Make a recommendation to the board carry forward.
Yeah.
And same things with the review that we had for Public Works. I mean, I appreciate, you know, Mr. Brand is being really busy, but we had 64 recommendations in there.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much it's your job to shepherd this thing, but it's somebody's job.
Yeah.
And so far, it needs to, something
maybe
needs
we
to
take,
happen.
Maybe we take five of the recommendations in a two-month period. Say, tell me what you're going to do about these.
You know, something else that came to mind was we are missing one of our greatest opportunities to engage with our taxpayers. Because we didn't have somebody to task. And I don't feel like this person has infinite capacity to do all these things. They're going to have to be a priority. We don't have anything going in our tax bill talking about the virtues of what the county's done with their hard-earned 58 cents per thousand contribution and the 93 going to our law enforcement programs. And that is a tragedy. And
right, because that's what they should make that connection. What did I buy?
Yep.
You've had this, what did I buy?
The city does it on a monthly basis through their bills that goes out. I don't know how the schools do it, but we're it, and we're not doing it. Everybody else would kill to have that opportunity.
You know, but this may work into, remember we kicked around at one time having a public information officer. Mm-hmm. That would be their job, to make sure that the message gets out every month consistently.
Well,
I know we kicked that around, but that was another one that kind of...
Lots of good ideas, but somebody needs to... And it's partially our responsibility, but...
Somebody needs to write these down.
Mm-hmm. At my point in my career, I feel like that's my job, is to come up with the great ideas and think of stuff that we haven't done yet and that we should do that would be game changers for our programs that we do. So we are the Joneses people are trying to keep up with.
I think it is. It's the responsibility of the board to be constantly looking for ways to do what we want to do. And, you know, I came in here the first thing. You know, it was all public safety. That is not mine. Public safety was something that I thought was going to take care of itself. But mine is public perception of what county government's all about. You know, we've got a lot of good things going on here, but they don't get it. They don't know it. Because we don't ever put it in their face. We don't ever brag about ourselves. And that's, to me, you know, City Grass Pass, I said, what are you hanging your head for? You shouldn't be embarrassed to work for the county or the city. You should be proud of it. We're one of the best organizations in the state of Oregon. Now when we go to these meetings and stuff, they go, wow, you're from Josephine County. Can I talk to you? Is it okay if I come down and visit with you?
Yeah.
I've never met Chris Boyce until the other day.
What a nice guy.
And, yeah, he came by, you know, at lunch hour. He goes, gosh, I like what you say.
Yeah.
You got to come and see me sometime. We need to go to lunch. But that's the thing. We're starting to turn that corner, mm-hmm. and being somebody that's relevant in the room. When we used to talk, people said, Josephine County, don't worry about that.
Well, we've been building that foundation by
for a long time.
People
yes.
who have been, you know...
We've got the oxen in the traces, and it can pull that wagon. Now we just got to get to Oregon.
Yep. Okay. Well,
you write all that down, Senior.
It was so inspirational. I'll have to listen to the tape.
Yeah. Take that. Well, you take a copy of that tape to conference with you. Yeah. You have something to listen to in the room at night.
Poor guy. Have fun. Enjoy it. There's nothing further.
Nothing.
The board's adjourned at 11:30.
I think that was quite enough.